Blog Talk Radio.
Color only day here on CNM with our very own Vincent Brown out of Durham, North Carolina. Black by Color Only is one of the most informative shows on CNM, giving us the reasons that the apostles of blackness are leading this nation in the wrong direction, along with the left. And Vincent will come down on the right too when they do not do what is right. Listen to the wisdom of Vincent Brown on Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will find out that the media is lying to us too, along with the leftists in our government. Some of the right are too, and in Hollywood also. He will make you use your mind and think a bit before making a rash judgment. That is Black by Color Only, only on CNM at 5 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays, where America always wins.
Tune in for the Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann Show, Sundays 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, to discuss current events, news, and political opinion with Lucid Libertarian flair. I promote liberty, freedom, our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and limited government, while speaking against corporate and government corruption, tyranny, and the globalist Great Reset agenda that undermines our precious American sovereignty. Please also like and follow my Lucid Libertarian with Lori Ann page on Facebook. You can help me battle their freedom-loathing censorship by visiting my page regularly, along with reacting, commenting, and sharing my posts. Thank you, and I hope listening to my show becomes part of your Sunday night routine.
Well, hello everybody out there. This is the Lucid Libertarian Lori Ann, co-host of tonight's show here on Conservative Nation Media. Robert, your host, is going to be late, and so he approximates he should be here in about an hour. And so lots on his plate, and so he asked if I could fill in for him, and I said, sure thing. So here I am, and hopefully everybody can hear me, and yep, I got myself unmuted. For some reason, the Direct Connect isn't working tonight, so I had to call in using the host line, which I haven't done for a long time. So hello out there. Again, happy Friday, and we're going to hold down the fort until Robert gets here in about an hour, and Dave Champion is one of my favorite people. He, on my show, Lucid Libertarian, he's a three-time guest. And he just put out a good video yesterday on firearms ownership as a right. Let's end the privilege tax on guns. And so I was like, ooh, you know, so since we're going to be waiting for Robert to get on board here, I thought this would be a good clip to play. It's rather long, but he usually goes toward the end. He, you know, promotes his book and everything, and so I might not play the entire thing and hopefully get to the guts of it and everything. And it's a little bit longer than usual, so I think I'm going to go ahead and play it while people are starting to, you know, funnel their way in. Duck Northwest Media is in the chat, same with Donnie C, so hello to you guys. And I know that pretty much everybody knows how much of a staunch Second Amendment supporter I am. And most of the people that listen are also the same. So I thought this would be a good clip to play. While we await Robert to be able to arrive on the scene. And so I'm going to go ahead and Gunslinger. Hey, Gunslinger, you'll probably like this one too. I did put a link to it in the chat room so that you can watch and listen if you like, or reference it later or share it or whatever. Follow him on Rumble. His YouTube deplatformed him a long time ago. So if you want to follow Dave Champion, you got to do so on Rumble. So that's why I put the link into the chat. And so I'm going to go ahead and kick this off. And like I said, it's a, he always does great clip three on this point. And I think we've even talked about this in the past, that, you know, taxes on guns. And he gets into why he's bringing this up, because California just imposed an additional tax on firearms. And there's already a federal tax on firearms. So that's something that I take issue with. And so I'm really glad that he did this video. Whatever he does, he always does a great job of it. And so let's go ahead and play this. 3, 2, 1, and watch.
Welcome to the show. You're probably aware that in 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court issued its Heller decision, which, after the American people lived for 217 years under the U.S. Constitution, finally declared the right to keep and bear arms to be a constitutionally protected individual right. While Heller was a sterling decision, a number of state issues concerning firearms continue operating as if firearms ownership is a privilege, not a right. Today we're going to consider one particularly odious issue that continues operating on gun owners as if owning a firearm is a government-granted privilege. The Dr. Reality Podcast with Dave Champion. Let me start with this. I am the author of Income Tax Shattering the Myth, the best-selling book in America that provides overwhelming facts, data, and evidence showing you the incontrovertible truth that Congress has never imposed the income tax on ordinary working Americans like you. One reason Income Tax Shattering the Myth has been so successful is it takes the most complex area of U.S. law, breaks it down clearly, and presents it in a way every American can understand. One of the issues of which it gives you an understanding is the two broad classes of taxing authority granted to Congress in the Constitution. The two broad classes of taxation are known as direct and indirect, what the U.S. Supreme Court has called the two great tax classes. For the purpose of today's discussion, we only need to focus on indirect taxes. There are a couple of categories of taxes that fall under the umbrella of indirect taxation, but the one we're going to examine today is a form of indirect taxation known as an excise tax. So what is an excise tax? According to the federal courts, it is the following, quote, "The terms excise tax and privilege tax are synonymous. The two are often used interchangeably," close quote. Let me give you that first sentence again. The terms excise tax and privilege tax are synonymous. You should now be clear that an excise tax is a tax levied on the exercise of a privilege. Since taxation is a government activity, the privilege that is the object of the tax is a privilege granted by government in law. When the government grants you a privilege, it is allowing you to do something that, absent the privilege extended to you in law, you would not have a right to do. A simple way to remember that is that a privilege is something you do not have a right to do. If you have a right to do a thing, no special government permission, a privilege, is needed to do it. In short, a privilege and a right are polar opposites. Now that you understand what an excise is, let's turn to the issue of excise taxes on firearms. The federal government imposes an excise tax of 10 to 11% on firearm sales, and Governor Newsom of California just signed a law adding an 11% excise tax to firearms sold in California, raising the firearms excise total there to as much as 22%. In America, no government has the authority to tax a right because, as the U.S. Supreme Court held in McCulloch v. Maryland, quote, The power to tax is the power to destroy, close quote. The significance of that holding in McCullough is that any right subject to a government tax can be taxed to the point where the exercise of the right is no longer possible. Let's use free speech as an example. You can say whatever you'd like to someone else, provided it's not something criminal, such as conspiring with another to commit a crime. You can literally tell a president of the United States that you think he's a piece of shit and the country would be better off if he died. And the government is powerless to do anything to you because of our constitutionally protected right of free speech. Now, imagine the government could impose a tax on your speech. On a practical level, could you tell a president he's a piece of shit if in order to do so you had to pay a $100 tax? The answer for most of you is you probably could. How about if the tax was $500? What if it was $1,000? $5,000? $10,000? What is the amount of tax at which you would no longer be able to exercise your right of free speech? That illustrates why taxation cannot be imposed on the exercise of a right. The federal excise tax on firearms was enacted in 1919, 89 years before the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in Heller that to keep and bear arms is an individually constitutionally protected right belonging to all Americans. In other words, Congress taxed firearms as if purchasing one is a government-granted privilege. That said, Congress imposed the excise on the manufacturer, producer, or importer of most commonplace firearms. Can Congress impose a tax on the importation of firearms? Presumptively, yes, but in a constitutional sense, that would be a duty, not an excise. A tax on the domestic manufacturers of firearms is a completely different matter. In post-Heller America, that won't fly because to impose a tax on a firearms manufacturer is still to tax the right to possess firearms. Let me give you a non-firearms example. Let's use freedom of religion. Because the most common religion in the U.S. is Christianity, let's consider the sale of Bibles. For the purpose of this example, let's say it costs a print house $20 to create a leather-bound Bible that retails for $50. In other words, a 250% markup takes place from the manufacturer to the retail buyer. Now, let's say the government puts a 1,000% excise tax on the manufacturer of Bibles. That means the cost to the manufacturer to produce that Bible would now become $200. If we apply the aforementioned $250 markup, the retail price of that Bible becomes $500. How many of you would or could purchase a Bible if instead of $50, it cost $500? What if it cost $1,000? $3,000? You get the point. A tax on the manufacturer of an item is, in a very real sense, a tax on the retail customer. Let's bring another facet of tax law into our analysis. A well-settled point of law is once a legislature has the legitimate constitutional power to tax a thing, the rate of tax is completely at the discretion of the legislature. In other words, if Congress can tax a thing at 1%, it can tax it at 1,000%. To phrase it in terms of firearms, if Congress can impose a 10% excise on the manufacturers of handguns, there is nothing stopping Congress from imposing a 5,000% tax on the manufacturers of firearms. The courts have also held that a legislature may not declare a right to be a privilege and then impose an excise tax upon it. The Supreme Court has also said it has a duty to examine the substance of a thing rather than its form. In this matter, the form is a privilege tax upon firearms manufacturers, but the substance of the matter is it's a tax affecting the ability of American citizens to acquire firearms because there is an inarguable government-created increase in what it costs to exercise the right. And under well-settled law, if the object of the tax were constitutionally legitimate, the government would be free to increase the rate of tax until the right could no longer be exercised. Let's take a moment to recap. An excise tax is a tax upon the exercise of a government-granted privilege. A right can never be a privilege. In 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court declared firearms ownership to be a constitutionally protected individual right. No legislature may declare a right to be a privilege and then impose an excise tax on it. A tax on manufacturers of firearms is, in substance, a tax on the exercise of the right to acquire firearms. In short, there is no way for the U.S. government or the state of California to enforce an excise on firearms once a pro-firearms advocacy organization challenges the tax in court. Though what we've covered so far are ample legal facts to have the excise tax on firearms declared unconstitutional, we might consider bringing the Bruin test into the discussion. In brief, the Bruin test says that in order for a law pertaining to firearms to be constitutional, whatever burden the law places on a firearms owner must be shown to have been a common acceptable practice in the founding era. Phrased another way, the burden placed on firearms owners cannot be one the founding generation would have viewed as odious. Since no excise tax existed on firearms until 1919, it would be impossible to show that the burden of an excise tax was a commonly accepted practice in the founding era. How does a tax on firearms differ from the excise tax on distilled spirits, which has existed since the founding of this nation? The tax on alcohol was and is considered a sin tax. A sin tax is an excise specifically levied on certain goods deemed harmful to society and individuals. Not only were firearms not thought to be harmful to society or individuals in the founding era, firearms held a place of honor. There are countless founding era quotes about the value and merit of firearms and an armed populace, but I'll just share one with you today. In an 1824 letter to John Cartwright, Thomas Jefferson said, quote, "The Constitution of most of our states assert that all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves, that it is their right and duty to be at all times armed." The very next words from Jefferson in that letter were these, quote, "They," meaning the citizens of the states, "are entitled to freedom of person, freedom of religion, freedom of property, and freedom of the press," close quote. We'll revisit Jefferson's words in a few minutes. Do the legislative attorneys who advise California's legislators know that in light of Heller, a state excise tax on firearms will very likely be struck down, and advise the legislators of that? I imagine so. As you can see from what we've discussed today, it isn't rocket science. But there's another reason that leads me to believe the legislators have been advised that the new law is a constitutionally impermissible tax on the right to acquire firearms. At the same time Newsom signed the excise tax bill into law, he also signed another bill that bans people from carrying guns in nearly every public space. That bill also contains an insane list of fees to be paid and other requirements to be met to receive a concealed carry permit. My point is that I'm 100% certain the attorneys who advise California legislators have told them there is no way in hell that law will pass constitutional scrutiny under the Bruin test. In other words, California legislators are passing laws they know will be declared unconstitutional as soon as they are reviewed by a federal court. That is the same tactic Washington, D.C. took after Heller struck down D.C.'s anti-firearms laws. The D.C. government simply passed a series of new laws that were almost as bad as the ones struck down by Heller. Every judge knows the corrupt game those legislators are playing. I said it then, and I'll say it now. The federal court should sanction the state's attorneys who make frivolous arguments before the court in defense of laws every junior high school kid would know won't pass constitutional scrutiny. If the federal courts started imposing, say, $20,000 sanction on the state's attorneys who brought that crap before the court, you'd quickly see the state attorney general say his department would no longer defend those laws. That would leave legislators with the choice of enacting laws that are in compliance with Heller and Bruin, or having noncompliant laws promptly struck down because the attorney general would notify the court it could not defend the statute in question. In my opinion, no court should permit a state, county, or city to return to court again and again and again over a period of years with anti-gun laws that have been only slightly modified, but in no way come anywhere close to meeting the clear standards established in Heller and Bruin. Now, let's circle back to Jefferson's words. Jefferson said, quote, "The Constitution of most of our states assert that all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves, that it is their right and duty to be at all times armed." Duty to be at all times armed. How many Americans fulfill that duty? Well, I do. I carry this at all times, every day. As Jefferson so aptly put it, I consider doing so both a right and a duty. By my estimate, roughly 98% of Americans shirk that duty. That's a shame because freedom isn't just about rights, it's also about responsibility. Thomas Paine said, quote, "Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigues of supporting it." But today, most Americans want their rights without the burden of any responsibilities. Then they wonder why our freedoms are diminishing. They blame everything and everyone except the person in the mirror. After speaking about the right and duty to at all times be armed, Jefferson said they, meaning the citizens of the states, are entitled to freedom of person, freedom of religion, freedom of property, and freedom of the press. I'm sure you'll all agree with Jefferson on that in rhetoric, if not in action. Today you learn that an excise tax is a tax upon the exercise of a government-granted privilege. Now, you just heard Jefferson, 33 years after the ratification of the U.S. Constitution, saying freedom of property is part of the liberty of the American people. But you don't have to take Jefferson's word for it. In Corn v. Fort, the court stated, quote, "The individual's right to live and own property are natural rights for the enjoyment of which an excise tax cannot be imposed." To own property is a natural right. That begs the question, what is property? I think many Americans are a bit vague on what constitutes property. The short and sweet answer is it's anything you own, whether it be a home or a bowling ball. Everything that belongs to you is your property. But in America, we have all sorts of euphemisms that I believe dull our sense of what is property. In business, as an example, we use words such as profit, margin, income, cash flow, and revenue stream. Workers get a paycheck, which I don't think many of them see as their property. When have you heard someone who received a paycheck say, "I just got $2,000 of my property"? I'll wager, never. Americans have been conditioned not to think about such things as property. Let me give you a couple of quick scenarios. Let's say a guy wants a ditch dug on his property. You tell him you'll do it for $500. When you complete the ditch, he hands you $500. In Coppedge v. Kansas, the U.S. Supreme Court said, quote, "The property that every man has is his personal labor." In other words, you started with property in the form of labor. You exchange that property for another form of property. But whether it is your labor or the $500 you received in exchange, it is, at all times, your property. Hopefully, you recall from earlier in the presentation that a right is the opposite of a privilege. Let's say you're an entrepreneur. You see a widget being sold for $100. At that moment, the widget is whose property? It's the property of the seller, right? You give the seller $100 in exchange for the widget. Whose property is the widget then? Yours. And the seller has something worth $100 you gave him. Whatever you gave him that he values at $100 is now his property. There was an exchange of equal value. You then reach out to people you know who need widgets, and you tell them you have one they can get for $200. One of them takes you up on your offer, giving you $200. If you valued the widget at $200 by setting that as the price, and the buyer showed he also valued it at $200 by paying you $200 for it, then again, there was an exchange of equal value. Between you paying $100 for the widget and then selling it for $200, you increase the property you possess by $100. That is what is known as the fruits of your labor. Now, Let's put this all together by hearing the words of the U.S. Supreme Court in Butcher's Union Company v. Crescent City Company. In Butcher, the court said, quote, "The property that every man has is his personal labor, as it is the original foundation of all other property, so it is the most sacred and inviolable. To hinder his employing it in whatever manner he thinks proper without injury to his neighbor is a plain violation of the most sacred property." Close quote. Why am I directing your attention to what is property and that acquiring, possessing, and disposing of property in whatever form is one of your fundamental unalienable rights? Just a moment ago in Corn v. Fort, you heard the court say, the individual's right to live and own property are natural rights for the enjoyment of which an excise cannot be imposed. For which an excise cannot be imposed. That makes perfect sense, right? Because you know a right is the opposite of a privilege, and an excise is a tax upon a privilege. So, with all this wonderful information under your belt, I have to add one critical piece of knowledge. Here is U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice Edward Douglas White Jr. writing in the court's Bruchaber decision, quote, "The Pollack case recognized the fact that taxation on income was, in its nature, an excise," close quote. That's Justice White in Bruchaber pointing out the precedent the court set in Pollack that income tax is an excise tax, a tax upon the exercise of a government-granted privilege. I should add that Bruchaber has never been reversed in whole or in part, so the holding of the court that income tax is an excise remains in force today. You know what an excise tax is, a tax upon the exercise of a government-granted privilege. You now know that your property, your labor property, and the fruits of property, such as your paycheck, are all constitutionally protected rights. And you know that the income tax is a tax upon the exercise of a privilege. So then, can you explain to me why you think you owe income tax? I'll wait. What you're seeing on the screen right now is a Form W-4. If you've ever worked for a company, you've undoubtedly filled out this form. I want you to listen to what I'm about to say very carefully. The form you're looking at is legally required only for non-resident aliens working for a government employer that is under the exclusive jurisdiction of Congress. I know that's not what you've been told, but hopefully 2020, 2021, and 2022 taught you how essential it is to question everything the establishment tells you. What you're seeing on the screen now is a Form W-9. If you work for yourself, you've undoubtedly filled out more than a few of these. Again, I want you to listen carefully to what I'm about to say. The form you're looking at is legally required only from those who are receiving payment of U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person. And again, I know that's not what you've been told. Do I need to repeat the part about how essential it is to question everything you've been told? Now the kicker. Signing a Form W-4 requires an employer to send the government a Form W-2 about you at the end of the year. The Form W-2 received by the government is presumptive evidence that you signed a W-4, which is only to be signed by a non-resident alien working for a government agency or instrumentality under the exclusive jurisdiction of Congress. Do you remember the Supreme Court said income tax is a tax upon the exercise of a government-granted privilege? Well, guess what? It is a privilege for a non-resident alien to obtain U.S. source income. When the government receives the presumptive evidence that you signed a W-4, the government takes you at your word that you're a non-resident alien with U.S. source income and then expects you to sign a Form 1040 and pay the privilege tax, the income tax. Why do they expect that? Because by signing a W-4, you told them you're a non-resident alien with U.S. source income. Here's the kicker for those who work for themselves. When you sign a Form W-9, you are attesting, under penalty of perjury, that the payments you're receiving are not your income, but rather are U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person. Once you sign that W-9, the party paying you is obligated to send the government a Form 1099 about you at the end of the year. That 1099 is presumptive evidence that you certified under penalty of perjury that the payments you received are U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person. And again, it is a privilege for a foreigner to derive U.S. source income. That privilege is taxable, and that tax is known as the U.S. income tax. If you attest under penalty of perjury to receiving U.S. source income belonging to a foreign person, you have to do one of two things. First, you can pass the income down the line, meaning you pay it out to a person who gives you a W-9, requiring you to send in a 1099, thus showing you no longer possess the foreign person's income. Or second, you have to pay the income tax owed by the foreign person on his or her U.S. source income. How do you pay the tax on the foreign person's U.S. source income? Simple. You file a 1040 or an 1120. Both of these are for reporting U.S. source income of a foreign person and paying the tax the foreign person owes. One form is for individuals, the other for corporations. You may have heard me talk about the fact that in the 110-year history of the income tax, 9 different Treasury decisions say Form 1040 is to be used by a non-resident alien with U.S. source income or the non-resident alien's U.S. agent, while there is not a single Treasury decision saying an American living or working in a state of the union, earning his or her own domestic source income, is required to file any form whatsoever. None. Nada. Zilch. Now, perhaps that makes more sense to you. What you've learned today is 100% factual, but it has also been basically an outline of the constitutional issues at play. Income Tax Shattering the Myths is a masterclass in the origins and proper legal application of the income tax. It verifies everything I've shared with you today, but it's even better than that.
All right. Cutting off the last few minutes of that clip as he's promoting his book, Income Tax Shattering the Myth. That was the clip from Dave Champion, a.k.a. Dr. Reality. And I thought that would be a good one. I know that we have a lot of Second Amendment supporters and a lot of Constitution supporters. And so with that, now that it's done, I see Joe Gibson raising his hand. We got Mike raising his hand. We got Gunslinger raising his hand. So I'm going to bring all three of you into the fold here. Hello, hello. Happy Friday. Thank you for tuning in and listening to that clip. Hey. And I remember, I don't know if you guys ever saw that about California imposing that additional tax on firearms. And I'm just waiting. You know, that is just right for, you know, for a federal judge or a to deem that unconstitutional because it, you know, a right cannot be taxed as if it's a privilege, which is, you know, the whole premise of that clip that I just played. So what do y'all think about that?
I'll let you guys go first.
Well, you know, being a longtime gun owner as myself, I shot my first high-powered shotgun when I was 10 years old, okay, 12-gauge, knocked me on my ass and loved them ever since, okay? These people cannot understand that the right to bear arms is a God-given right. It's not a privilege. Privileges can be taken away. Same thing with a driver's license or driving. It's a right. It's not a privilege. Okay, these people are totally confused on the issue. They'll the Wicked Witch of the West that departed to hell last week. She was hell-bent, get it? Hell-bent, on destroying the Second Amendment in this country. She railed her entire career railing against the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms, okay? Self-defense, everything. You know, it's just, it's insane that when some people like that, that will try to destroy the very country that was founded on guns, the middle bang bang things that lead come out. Okay, that's what made this country. God, guns and guts. Okay, but people like Frankenstein. Okay, is again hell bent on trying to destroy it. Whether you tax the hell out of it or you tax the ammo, what good is a gun if the ammo is so expensive that you can't afford to buy it? What are you going to do? Say bang bang, bang bang, and hope the fucker drops dead? That ain't going to happen. You know that. Okay. But there's people out there like that. They're crazy and totally insane. Go ahead.
Well, you know, look, with all the stuff they're doing anyway across the country, I mean, look, according to the people out there today, listen, you have another site out there that says, no, the country was not founded upon God, number one. We have people that believe that the Second Amendment's not for us, it was for the militias. I argue with them today, just for instance, on the Nextdoor app. They have a Nextdoor app. I don't know if they got them in your state or whatnot, but where neighbors all come together and they talk about issues and everything, or they, you know, put what's on their mind. And one person put in the put a post up there yesterday saying that they had a town meeting and they feel uncomfortable because it was conducted inside of a church. So they feel uncomfortable about that. Listen, most meetings, political meetings, were conducted in churches back in the day. Okay, if you remember correctly, and go look it up, it's true. You know, and but other people, that's not true. No. You know, and besides, this is the melting pot, America. You know, we could believe whatever we want. You could believe whatever you want. That's correct. You can choose to believe whatever you want. You're free to do that. But your beliefs that you have are great, but those are not the foundational principles of what this country was founded upon, and what was brought here, and the ideas that were brought here. Okay, they were not escaping. They were escaping a tyrannical king over in England, not forcing them to worship God. No, they were of a religious, moral people that came over here. Jefferson said it very clearly. Our Constitution is for a religious, moral people, wholly inadequate for any other. It's simple as that. Doesn't say that you must worship God. You don't have to. Nobody has to. You're free to worship whatever you want, but doesn't mean you have the right to go teaching our kids that in school, impressing upon atheist or revolution or any other Darwinism in school. That's not what we can, you know, look, just look at the facts. Look what happened since this is all beginning to start to be challenged in the 20th century. Our country has gone downhill ever since we removed prayer from schools, ever since we started Roe versus Wade. The country has gone downhill. We can all agree on that. We're not happy with the way the country is running today, correct? Wouldn't we like to have the same values that we had back in the 1800s? Wouldn't we like the same freedoms that we had back 200 years ago? I would. I would don't want to be regulated. I don't want to be licensed on everything I do. I don't believe in occupational licensing boards, one thing I'm challenging right now in North Carolina. I don't like it. But, of course, we have to have common sense. I don't want a guy who's blind flying a 747 for me to go to Los Angeles, right? I mean, use common sense. I mean, you know, it's clear. I don't want my grandmother, who's 92 years old, to say, Joey, I'll go pick up dinner in the car. She don't know how to drive because she's blind, half blind, and you know, old, and you know, we don't need her on the road. You're right. She'll kill everybody. So you know, there should be some sort of certification, you know, where you're qualified to do something. Don't got a problem with that at all, with schooling and education to qualify you to do a job. Nothing wrong with that. But to license people and then tell them that some guy in a suit down in Raleigh or in the state capitol is going to decide whether or not you're qualified to have the job or to do something that you want to pursue in your happiness. That's wrong. That's tyranny. That's over-regulating and over-licensing, and that's wrong. That's not freedom.
Yep, you got that right. And then I'm going to go ahead and bring a couple people in. We got Montana Joe I'm going to bring in, and I'm going to bring in Pianchi. Montana Joe, you're on. Pianchi, you're on.
Let me say this, to your point, to Gunslinger's point and to the other guy's point, the two things that they want, that the British wanted to do when they came to America to start the war, is they want to shut down the churches, and they want to shut down, and they want to get all the stuff that was needed to make the guns and the ammo and the the powder and everything else. So to get the guns away from the revolutionaries, and by the way, the revolution started in the churches. Have you ever heard of the Black Robe Regiment? Black Robe,
yes.
being the preachers in the churches. So yeah, and you're right. Why do we need a license to carry a gun? Why do we need a license to drive? Why do we need a license to do X, Y, and Z, A, B, and C? You know, well, one thing is getting a license is a way for the government, for Big Daddy government, to get their pound of flesh. You know, oh, you got to pay for a driver's license, or you got to pay for a business license, and you got to pay for license and bonded to, I don't know, take down a tree or whatever the hell it is. And so, yeah, it's all about the money with these tyrannical people. It's all about the money. You got to have some way to soak the people of their money. You know, if you're
it's also a control mechanism as well, because, oh, you do something wrong that, you know, pisses Big Daddy off. Well, now we're going to take your license away from you. Now we're going to take away your ability to earn a living doing whatever it is that you had to get the license for. You know, so that's also a big part of it.
But, Lorianne, what are we doing about it, though? What are we doing about it? That was going to be my question to Mike. What are we doing about it? Who's out there doing what to fix this problem?
I can answer that in a very, very short way, because, Joe, I got you. Would you be interested in a program that helps the incarcerated to transition over from prison to civilian life?
Yeah, sure.
Good, because you're booked on a program Saturday night. I'm the host. I read the book.
All right.
Okay. And it's not Robert's Network. It's somebody offered me the gig for, I don't know, next week or the week after. So I got you booked because you were incarcerated, and these people who will be joining you have been incarcerated, have written books about it. Some are correctional officers. One might join, who might be a former warden, stuff like that. So
that's great. And that goes alongside with the topic tonight. You know, that's one of the restrictions people have. You know.
So are you talking tomorrow night, Saturday night, or a week from tomorrow? Just wanting to clarify.
Yeah, a week from tomorrow. A week from tomorrow.
Great.
A week from tomorrow.
And what Lorianne was talking about, the control. Think about what is happening today. Those doctors who wanted to speak out against COVID and who wanted to recommend hydroxychloroquine, they were threatened to having their licenses pulled.
Yep. Terrible.
You know what,
exactly.
Joe Montana? That was two former criminals. It was black that was exonerated. And they was on Judge Joe Brown's show today. One guy's name was Scott. I can't think of the other name. But these guys spent about 13 years in prison, and they was innocent from the beginning. You need mm-hmm. That would be a good source to have on your show.
Yeah, it would be.
As a matter of fact, part of the reason why they're having that program on next Saturday is so we can start a letter writing camp. They think letter writing is very effective. So I say, okay. So the host offered me the gig. I said, okay, no problem. And people will start writing their congressmen, writing their mainstream media, and growing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We'll see what we can do. You know,
yeah,
good. I like
idea.
That. I like that. And, you know, and it's like I was just saying real quick, not that Bianca gave up there, but, you know, who's out there doing and contributing and helping? You know, I know there's people on this phone line right here that are out there working. Joe is. I know Bianca is, obviously puts his money where his mouth is. Other people out there who are actually boots on the ground, activism, that are trying to fight and do what needs to be done to change this problems we're having. And I think more people are waking up, but it's not enough yet.
But you're right.
I'm going to interrupt here for just a second because there is a Skype caller that has had their hand raised, and I want to find out who it is that we got on the line.
Maybe your friend Warren.
Hey, Skype caller, you are on. Who do we have on the line?
Oh, boy.
How about Brother Warren's arch nemesis?
That's a lot better.
I was hoping that might be you, Sarge.
Okay. Well, look, why don't you guys go and finish your comment? Because you were in the middle of a train of thought. I'd like to hear the end of it, and then I'll add my little commentary to the mix.
What is the network that this on, and how do we find the show?
Yeah, she has a show every day. Shedding Light is the name of the show. Shedding Light. And Leona. So she's been working for years because she has a loved one that's incarcerated, and she's been working for years to help the innocent who've been behind bars, those who've been guilty, and to help them, go through the transition of coming out of prison so that they don't have to have, the recidivism rate that we have today.
Yeah.
And, I think it's a good idea. And there have been people who have written books about it because they were formerly incarcerated prisoners. And I'm figuring they got a motivation. You know, why not? So I'll take the gig.
Yeah, man.
And
that's
one
good.
Guy
that's
that
good.
She has on our show, Reginald Clemens, I know his mother and father and know his story very well. Happened in St. Louis on the Chain of Rocks Bridge.
Yeah, he showed up on the show. I think last week or the week before. Huh. So, it's the beginning. I mean, if that can be a model, people can say, you know what? Because all you have to do is stay home and write a letter. What? How hard can that be?
I know. And you'd be surprised, Joe. You'd be surprised how hard it really is for people not to do it. You know?
I know you spearheaded an effort to have the election, to have people present their viewpoints and getting honest elections. But these people are already motivated. These people have already written books, So I'm hoping that, let's just see.
Go ahead.
Sarge, you was on the show with Joe Brown. You listened to the testimony of those two that was exonerated. I think the one haven't been exonerated, but that was some very, very striking testimony that they gave.
Oh, it was powerful and compelling. It spoke directly to the abuses of the state when they don't follow the rules, the laws of evidentiary procedure, the laws regarding appeals, and simple common decency with regard to the presumption of innocence. I mean, it was powerful testimony. I think that person would be great to have on the show to tell his story. It's really quite...
Absolutely.
And he was really convincing. He's really very convincing in his relating of the story. You really thought you were listening to an innocent man wrongfully convicted.
Oh, okay. That's what I was about to ask you and Bianchi, if this guy was one of the many who have been wrongfully convicted.
Yeah, he was one of the ones. He was relating his own story.
Okay. Well, the reason why I got involved in it is not because I'm a humanitarian, but because it's practical. Why would I or anybody here who is a civilian, why would we want to have people who transition from prison, who have been boxed up for years, who haven't had any kind of empathy given them, haven't had any kind of therapy? Why should we let them out just so they can be afraid of civilian life and be a threat to us? I've talked about this for a while, so I figured, if you're going to offer me that little gig, I'm going to accept.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It's like the end of the Shawshank Redemption when the old librarian gets out of prison and he doesn't know what to do with himself, and he goes off and he commits suicide because all he knows is prison life, right?
Yeah.
So when you're deemed to have served your prison and you're not a threat to society, we need to be able to get to a point where we can give these people the skills to, you know, that.
You don't have to give people anything. You know what you got to do is take down restrictions. People out of the way of people. You know, the American people are resolved enough, can go out and create and pick themselves up. The problem is you have the wall of the government in your way, you know, and they won't let you get over the wall, you know, and they won't give you the tools to chop through the wall. You know, that's the problem.
Can I add something here real fast?
Yeah.
If you go and Google or even go on YouTube and put in Dallas Uptown Burglar. Dallas Uptown Burglar. Okay. This was back, I guess it's been probably 10 years now, somewhere in there. And this guy and his group of little crackhead thugs were going around North Dallas up there breaking into people's things, stealing and, you know, doing all these great and wonderful things to support their dope habit. Okay. Well, this guy is interviewed, and one night, Dallas SWAT team bust him. They bust the whole damn ring, and he's a ringleader. Well, they gave him 65 years in prison, okay? He did 7.5. They paroled him, and now he's a motivational speaker of his experience of what he did. I mean, completely turned his life around. Totally. Totally, completely. He said if it wasn't for the Dallas SWAT team, he'd be dead right now. And you ought to hear how he tells what prison life is and how you can avoid it and avoid the drugs and avoid the burglar. But he was labeled the Uptown Burglar in Dallas. Actually a true story. Actually a true story. So there's an example of one person that can turn their life around.
Eventually?
Yeah.
There's a guy who was wrongfully in prison for, I don't know, 16 years. He got out. He became a lawyer. He went after the prosecutor who went after him illegally, right, and got him behind bars. So I like to have that guy.
Yeah,
remember,
that's good right here.
They
like
put Mike Nifong in the slammer for what he did in the Duke lacrosse case. So not only did he get disbarred, he got disbarred, and he had to do like 2 weeks, 3 weeks in jail for contempt of court or something like that. So it can happen. I mean, it's not likely. When it's deliberate, when they deliberately contrive to go against constitutional rights, there are occasions where prosecutors get sanctioned and jailed, convicted in jail for it. Admittedly, it's rare because they don't want to put prosecutors in jail just because they're incompetent or, you know, stupid. You know, you understand, I think you can understand why. But when they deliberately contrive to deprive a defendant of their constitutional rights, yeah, those people should definitely go to jail.
I don't like, Sarge, I don't like the job of the prosecutor's office, their attitude, that it's all about convictions, you know. I don't like that. That's the wrong way. That's the wrong way to approach, you know, we got to have a tough prosecutor, get tough on crime. You know, it's all about convictions. It's got to be about justice. What's the justice? You know, what is the right thing to do in a situation? A guy breaks the law, you got to be held accountable, you know.
Well, Joe, look at our Constitution. Our Constitution does not make it easy to convict anybody. We've got a Fourth Amendment that requires warrants to be issued on oath or affirmation, whether they be search or arrest warrants. We got a Fifth Amendment that protects you against the right of self-incrimination. We got a Sixth Amendment that allows you the right to speedy trial and to face your accusers. We got an Eighth Amendment that forbids cruel and unusual punishment. We've got rules of evidence that forbid hearsay evidence, that's properly maintained properly.
Sorry,
so
but
it's
we've
not
got a million
easy
statutes and codes that put you in jail, though. You know, so it's just that are unconstitutional.
Well, but that's a different matter now. Now we're talking about something entirely different. We're talking about too many laws have been overlaid on top of this structure that are either redundant or unnecessary. And that, again, goes back to corruption. That's not a problem with the Constitution itself. problem is corruption and banality and stupidity and laziness.
And greed.
Hey, so you know, maybe we can hook Valerie, because she's got direct contact with him, with Montana Joe, because, and another thing, that show should be archived and people can listen to it. That was one of the most convincing testimonies I've heard.
I'd like to hear it.
You hear it.
It's
very compelling and powerful. I mean, this guy was so clear about everything, his recollection of, and his recital of everything that happened. You couldn't find any missteps in his testimony. You need to listen to it. I can put a link to it in the chat room. I'll put a link to it.
Please do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Please do. Yeah.
And he was exonerated without DNA.
Yeah, and that's what he said. That's what they said. What his problem was going to be. There was no DNA to assist in his exoneration. And he said that was one of the biggest problems he was having. Everyone was telling him, look, they're not going to acquit you with no DNA evidence to the contrary. It's just not.
Yeah. Yep. I know.
But I'd like to go back to what you were talking about earlier about this taxation of firearms and firearms ammunition and all that. Look, that is unconstitutional for the same reason a poll tax is unconstitutional, for the same reason. I mean, and even more so in the case of firearms, because you're not supposed to infringe it. I mean, even the Voting Rights Amendment, the 15th Amendment, isn't that explicit. But we got to remember, the whole country got started because the British, the duly certified, constituted government of the day, the British Crown, worked and exercised in gun control. And the people of the time shot back at the duly constituted authorities, the legally authorized agents of the Crown, who were coming to take their guns away. They shot at them. They got in a running gun battle from Lexington all the way back to Boston, killed 79 British troops and wounded 150 more. So it was on. But here's the thing about it. This is the thing. Remember about that. The Constitution is the most check and balance document ever written. There's checks and balances against one aspect of the government wherever you look. Federal government is checkmated by the states. States are checkmated by local entities. The states are sometimes checkmated by the federal government. The people have rights that they retain over and above the various levels of government. There's checks and balances everywhere. One of them was in the application of force. They wanted the people to have a comparable level of force to the military establishment of the day. Now, the problem is that the firepower imbalance has gotten to be so great that now we have people saying it is futile to even think of resistance to a tyrannical government who might want to enslave you. You shouldn't even think about it, even if that was the original intent, because after all, they got so much firepower, you don't stand a chance. Like Joe Biden told you, they've got nuclear weapons and an F-16. So see, it is this gradual disarmament of us, of disabusing us and steering us away from the right to military pattern weapons that redress some of that imbalance that is causing a lot of the discussion today. The right is obsolete. It doesn't mean anything today.
Remember,
back then, you could, unlike what Joe Biden said, you could own a cannon. You could own a cannon if you could afford to buy a cannon. As far as I'm concerned, federal government ought to subsidize your right to arms and ammunition, the basic load of a typical infantryman, along with some extra rounds of practice in the common military calibers of the day.
Good. I like that law. That'd be a good
one. That's what they ought to do.
And think about this, guys and Sarge. Think about this. What was the big deal with the Spanish-American War and the whole thing with the Alamo? Yeah, they had the guns. The people now, it was a Pyrrhic victory. It was a victory nonetheless, but it was kind of a defeat at the time. But they had just enough guns to survive for a short time, but not enough to win the battle, right, against Santa Ana. You know, Santa Ana had more guns. So, but they had the guns. They had the guns. They were able to defend themselves at least for a short amount of time at the Alamo. So, yeah, these people, and look, as far as these out of control AGs and things of that nature, they need to be prosecuted. So, you know, the Fannie Willis's, the Jack Smiths, the, you know, Letitia James's, the Alvin Braggs, all these people need to be, I mean, you know, Nifong got, yeah, it was a slap on the wrist, but he got prosecuted. He got prosecuted. He served his time, right? These other guys.
He lost his law license, too. He lost his law license even more critically, maybe.
Yep. And these other guys, they need to, like I said, Letitia James and all the rest of them, need to have something done to them. Need to have the smackdown laid to them. Even these freaking judges, you know, Atlanta, the one in Atlanta, the one, the three in New York, and the one and Chutkin in Washington D.C. They all need to have something done to them, you know, to get the point across that you cannot.
Yeah, I think that you're touching on something that we've talked a lot about before. It's like,
no, they don't need to have anything done to them. We don't condone violence. We don't condone that. Make sure you're clear on what you're talking about there. Make sure you're clear.
Excuse me, I was talking.
No, I know, but I want him to make sure you don't get in trouble. Make sure he's clear on that. I'm trying to protect you.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, removal from
I know, but be careful. Be careful, because judges, when you say something against judges, that's very, they take that very seriously. They'll shut you down on that.
I'm talking about impeachment of these judges.
Okay. All right. I'm just saying, be careful.
Yeah, I think that there needs to be criminal consequences to it. When there's no criminal consequences to it, when they knowingly, you know, invalidate the Constitution, when they knowingly do this stuff, even legislators, they knowingly pass these laws that they fully well know is unconstitutional, you know, even in defiance of Supreme Court decisions and stuff, and legislators pass this stuff, and AGs prosecute it, and judges go along with it. The problem is there's no consequences for it. You know, oh, no, they lose their license. That's not enough. You knowingly violated the Constitution. You knowingly violated your oath. You need to be in jail for doing it. And maybe, just maybe, if we got serious about consequences for these things, then these corrupt politicians and these corrupt AGs and prosecutors and these corrupt judges will fucking think twice before they continue doing it.
Well, you know, there's a way to get that done. Well, one of the most devastating things that these prosecutors are doing against Trump, they are setting a precedent.
Yes,
they
are.
And you like it, they're setting a precedent, and they also are emboldening other prosecutors to make haphazard, lousy efforts like what we're witnessing here. Yes,
I know.
They do need to be punished.
Yeah, because you remember that guy Hal Turner that was on the radio? He was on the broadcasting, and he threatened two judges. And he said those exact words, something should be done, and they put him right in federal prison. So that's why I was saying you got to be careful when you use those types of words, because they take that very seriously about judges, you know, especially on a conservative talk show, you know, the way they're coming after us nowadays, you know. So you just got to be careful. That's all I meant by that.
It's funny that they didn't apply that to Thomas and Kavanaugh. But I was going to say one thing about the gentleman, the person that done this speech on, I call it a sermon on taxes. That's one of the best I ever heard.
That is one of the best I ever heard. Fellas, go back to the so-called Summer of Love in Portland and what they were doing. They were attacking a courthouse, right? Right,
yep,
Lorianne?
They were attacking
a federal courthouse in Portland. And and nothing happened to them.
That's crazy.
You want some of the chicken parmesan?
Yeah, but if they were carrying Trump flags, though, they would have been in the tank. They'd call out tanks and probably hit them with the freaking cruise missiles.
Hey, Oliver! Come on, you Oliver! Come on, you Oliver! Come on, you Oliver!
Sorry, what are you talking to?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm
going
sorry.
Crazy?
What are you talking about?
I'm calling my cat. I'm calling my cat. I'm sorry. I thought I was on mute. I apologize. I'll put myself on.
I got confused too. I'm like, huh?
God damn, man.
Maybe
and then, you know, this whole conversation leads to a question too about, like, why are judges a protected class? You know, why are they so protected? Why is it like a danger
they
to
are,
us
though.
To actually hold them to be accountable and have consequences for their actions as well? When they knowingly violate the Constitution and knowingly violate their oath of office.
Yep.
You know what, Laurie? A judge don't have to be a lawyer. Anybody on this line could be a judge and hear arguments between two parties. Did you know that?
Really? I thought you had to be a member
That's
of the bar.
True.
Well, no. Member of the bar is just
depends on the state, but in most states, no, you don't have to be a lawyer.
You don't have
to be admitted to the bar. No. Many of them have gone to law school, but a lot of them aren't admitted to the bar.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh,
you probably aren't going to get appointed if you don't have, you know,
that's
education
true.
In the law. I mean,
but
how are you
saying
supposed to interpret the law? But,
well, that's
you know.
True, but we're just saying that there's no legal requirement or constitutional requirement that you can want.
Yeah. Your appointment's going to be based on how you rule, probably against the Constitution in the past. But a common court with a common court judge can be your people in the neighborhood. They pick an elder or whoever, and they listen to the argument, and they agree to the decision.
Right.
Hello?
That's the thing. Like, you know, let's take Fannie Willis, for example. She needs her funding needs to be cut, and they need to find a way to get her off the case, but Brian Kemp over there in Georgia don't want to call a special session for them to try to get her off it, right? So if we got a so-called Republican that doesn't want to, you can see that this case is bullshit, this case in Georgia is bullshit, right? You can see that. Everybody can clearly see that. And Brian Kemp don't want to call a special session to get this stuff done, to get her to drop that case.
She's not going to drop nothing.
If you cut her funding, if you cut her money, if you cut the money off, you know.
Yeah, but
she's
funded by Congress. Is she funded by Congress? No, she's paid by the state. So, you know, you can't cut her funding
the
then.
There's this particular state senator or House member that wants to call a special session to do exactly that, to bring her up, to bring her in front of the legislature and try her and cut her money.
But here's the problem with that. Here's the problem with that.
Here's
the problem with that. And it's a futile quest because of the nature of the Georgia legislature and their unwillingness to address the issue. They don't want to bother with it. They're not going to do it. You're right. The mechanism is there, but they're not going to do it. He tried.
Sorry,
he failed.
She's elected.
They can do all of it, but I'm telling you, the mechanism that this senator tried to do to get the process started was short-circuited. It was a futile quest.
Have you ever heard her campaign, why she said she was running? Or was that the one up in New York? One of them
said
they
were
running.
She said she was running to get Donald Trump and his organization and his children. She said it out loud. I don't know why she didn't go before an ethics committee in New York over that. I do know why. I know why she didn't, but she should have.
Well, you know, it's all futile, the arguments, until, like I said, until we also agreed on earlier, until we all become that fourth branch of government and start holding their feet to the fire, you know, and lawfully, and you know, doing our duty under the Constitution, the provisions of the Constitution, you know. Do what they do. You know, if you can't get them with the law, get them by procedure, you know. I mean, there's got to be a way to get them out of there.
That's the thing. That's the thing. With these people, the process is the punishment. All right? They may not be looking to put, they may be looking to put him in jail, but it's not the fact, that may be an extra thing. They want him to go through the process of spending money and going to court and all this stuff. The process is the punishment. They're trying to bankrupt the man.
I know with judges, there's a judicial system, a judiciary committee that you could write to go after judges that way. But other than that, they enjoy qualified immunity. You cannot sue a judge. You know, you can't there. You know, unless you get them removed from the bench.
Let me tell you what that no good rotten governor of mine, Brian Kemp, said about an attempt to dismiss Fannie Willis's case or impeach her. This is what he said, and I'm quoting. And remember, he's the one that's got to call for the special session once it's voted on, or unless it's a veto-proof majority, which it never would be. Here's what he said. He said a special session would, quote, ignore current Georgia law and directly interfere with the proceedings of a separate but equal branch of government. The bottom line is that in the state of Georgia, as long as I'm governor, we're going to follow the law and the Constitution regardless of who helps arms politically. And Georgia will not be engaging in political theater that only inflames the emotions of the moment. And it was also reflecting some of the reality that there simply were not enough votes in the legislature for the motion to prevail. So it's a combination of the two.
So, what needs to happen here, and we're talking about something about, well, you know, who's going to be the next Speaker of the House and all that stuff. It would be funny. Anybody can be Speaker of the House, right? It would be funny if Trump was the next Speaker of the House, and then all these subpoenas would fly, you know. You would see a subpoena for Fannie Willis. You would see a subpoena for Letitia James. You would see a subpoena for Jack Smith. You would see a subpoena for, Chutkin and all the rest of these judges. There's three cases going on in New York now, okay? There's the property case, his properties. There's the Skanky Daniel case, and there's the E. Jean Carroll case. Three cases, right?
Yeah.
Plus the rest of these cases that are going on in, Atlanta and all this other, all these in Washington, D.C. I'm not worried about that. The case down in Florida. I'm not worried
about any of them.
Probably. I think probably this judge who Florida's the most MAGA state in the union. Number one, this is a MAGA judge. Number two, and number three, this place where it's going to be this Fort Pierce is voted like 80 plus, almost 90%. For Trump the last time. So this place where this judge in this place, this courtroom, she might very well dismiss this case down there in Florida. So that case may be gone sooner or later, probably sooner or whatever.
I mean, is this really what we're concerned about, really? Because, really, you know, we got a lot of other issues. I mean, Donald Trump's going to be fine.
Right.
I'm just saying,
these people that right now they have no fear, these, you know, Fannie Willis and Letitia James and Alvin Bragg and people like that and Jack Smith, they have no fear of being disciplined. No fear whatsoever.
Well, you got to have somebody there with discipline, like they done that prosecutor in St. Louis, the first black female, Kim Gardner. And when she got elected, the same year that Eric Greitens got elected on the coattails of Trump, she going to indict him for some bunch of bullcrap. Supposedly, he and another woman was in a hotel. She was drunk, and he took pictures of her while she was naked. So
Was
she indicted? And that's the same woman that went after the McCloskeys, who was protecting their property when a Black Lives Matter group broke down a private gate to get onto their private street. She had the police to come confiscate the gun that McCloskey's wife had, which was a stunt gun, and had the police to make it operable.
Wow.
They go to court, and she's supposed to produce these pictures where there ain't no damn pictures. So the governor put into a motion, an action, to kick her butt out of her seat there in St. Louis, and seeing what the tide looked like that was coming, she resigned. She's working in the hospital drawing people's blood.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that we should be working more towards, though, as we try to get rid of this liberal woke nonsense and everything, but this is for everybody out there, the question, don't you think we should be working and striving towards back to the system where we don't have a two-party system anymore? Anybody?
Eventually, perhaps, that might be an idea. Although I think what we would realize, though, we also need to consider what would happen with the probability of a coalition government. Now, we're not used to the United States being governed by coalition. That could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. We would have to see. We agree that both parties are corrupt, so there's no argument there. Both the parties are corrupt. The way this two-party system is doing, we have a monopoly on incompetence, on tyranny, and on malfeasance. Okay, that's a given. I don't even need to argue that. But what would a coalition United States government look like? I think that's a question we need to ask.
Or a bipartisan or nonpartisan independent review committee in each state, Citizens Review Board.
I can tell you what I would like to see, and many people are already talking up on this, is that each state pays the salary of their congresspeople, congressperson and the U.S. senator. And I like to get back to the point where the legislature appoints the U.S. senator that represents that state. That's what I would like to see.
Yeah. I like that idea. Oh, the reason why they say the reason why they changed it is because of corruption, right? And they changed it at the time when, what was it, Tammany Hall and all that shit was going on, right? I'd like to get back to that. I'd like to get back to, because that's the way it was supposed to be, that the legislature's appointed as the U.S. senators. And we elected the House. It was the House of Representatives was the people's house, right?
Well, remember, though, the problem is that as the Constitution is supposedly written, you cannot forbid political parties. You just can't do it. You got the First Amendment right to redress, petition redress grievances, and you've got the right of free association with like-minded people. There is no way. Now, all the government direct subsidies for these parties, no. With primaries that favor political parties,
No, that should not exist. But as our Constitution is presently written, there's no way it would be a political party. And that would be completely unconstitutional. People have a right to form associations. They have the right to petition the government for redress of grievances and advocate for the kind of people they want to get elected to office. There's just no way you're going to do it.
Well, but then again, that right to redress of grievances, I think, has been destroyed because when Trump tried to go for redress of grievances, it didn't work because they didn't get it through the court, and then it didn't get it through the Congress, you know, because we had a Bushy in the court, but also we had a traitor in the Congress with Pence, you know. Pence had, the Constitution says he had the power to do that, right? So that Electoral Count Act of 1870, right? I'm not arguing about whether that act
did have the power. You're absolutely right. He had the power to do it.
I'm just saying what it says.
Right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
So it said that he had that right to do that, as evidenced by the fact that they come back after that happened, after he got screwed out of it twice, Trump got screwed out of it twice, and they changed it to where now the vice president is more of just a ceremonial deal in that respect. So
now,
you got to ask yourself again, why'd they do that? Why'd they change that particular part of the rule?
If the vice president had the constitutional power to remit the electoral count of a state back to the states for reconsideration, if he had that power, then that means the amended Electoral Count Act of 1877 is unconstitutional in that respect, because no statute can overrule the Constitution if the Constitution grants authority to the vice president to remit the electoral vote back to the states for reconsideration.
Mm-hmm.
So that would mean that if that act they did in December 2021, which they said was clarifying what they said was the ministerial role of the vice president, that means that act has to be unconstitutional. Now, if and when it goes to the court to determine its constitutionality, as of right now, it stands as law.
Well, if you're standing there with two sets of electorates, common sense would tell you that something's wrong here. Give it back to the state where it came from and let them work that out.
Yep. I would agree.
Yep.
But remember,
that's right.
That was the object of the objections to some of the electoral count that was short-circuited by the riot that I am absolutely convinced was instigated by people working on behalf of the Democratic Party or the Democratic Party itself to allow Nancy Pelosi to invoke the very emergency rules that shut down procedural objections to the election. That was going to be taken care of by 147 members of the House of Representatives in the United States Senate who voiced their intentions to object to the electoral count. It didn't happen because of the January 6th riot. Yep.
And that's the deal. And that was my point. Well, that whole situation was not about what the press and the Democrats said it was about. You know, it was about redress of grievances, but that was January 6th. That's what it was about. And they can't lie to me and say it wasn't, because I know the truth.
Well, I think the rioters were government agencies. I really believe they were government agents and instigators, or some agents of some group that wanted to shut down the objections to the electoral count. I don't have any direct evidence of it other than circumstantial evidence, but I am absolutely convinced of it. I'm absolutely convinced of it without any direct evidence of it. Nothing else makes any sense to me. They're accusing Donald Trump of the very thing that would have granted his objections to the election even more legitimacy. That doesn't make sense that he would instigate a riot that did the very thing that would help give him more credibility to his election objection. I mean, these people are projecting on him what they did as a diversion. Nothing else makes sense.
Hey, by the way, our host has arrived in the chat room and is unmuted. So Robert might want to say hi to everybody.
Hello, everybody. I got some really interesting news here. Remember about a month ago when our governor here in the state did that unconstitutional gun ban?
Yep.
He did it again.
What?
Yep. It says here from Opinion Post, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has again extended her anti-gun executive orders, introducing a renewed order that includes updated measures to curb access to firearms.
Okay. This woman's got to be removed from office, or she's got to be made an example of. She's got to be. Y'all got to get rid of her. That's it. She's got to go.
She definitely
does.
She definitely does. Well, everybody went against her on the last one. The attorney general actually went against her, and all the state cops and the mayor of Albuquerque, who is a Lujan Grisham follower, he went against her. And now she's doing it again. So I wonder what if she thinks that she's going to have any different.
I think Congress is supposed to be voting on condemning her right to keep her. Didn't they make some sort of resolution condemning her for doing it? I mean, you know, resolutions don't have any impact of law, I know, but it does express a sense of Congress. Wasn't there a vote on that?
I am not sure. I heard something about that, but I'm not sure. I heard it, and
well,
nothing else was said.
Well, the citizens of New Mexico need to take decisive action against this crazy woman. They need to get rid of her.
Absolutely.
Forthwith. She needs to go.
Absolutely.
True.
And I've been wearing around a T-shirt that I made that says Impeach MLG. It has a picture of her looking like the Wicked Witch of the West. And she's saying, make it stop, make it stop, make it stop. And underneath it says, New Mexico deserves to have MLG gone.
Yeah, she's got to go. She's got to go. Otherwise, you'll have more of these little petty tyrants being encouraged in other states.
Yep, and there's a lot of states that are watching.
Better believe it.
So,
I mean, it enrages me. That the party that cites we're doing it to protect the children is willing to count as hundreds of thousands of abortions every year, including late-term abortion. The very party that says they're doing it for the children. And they are in love. They are enamored with. They worship the great God Moloch and the sacrament of abortion. I've never seen anything like these people. I never dreamed in the United States I'd see people like this. So blatantly, openly, that word hypocritical doesn't begin to describe it. We've got to have another word.
Well, what we've got going here in New Mexico right now is that last time I did a show, we had two representatives who were impeachment of her. And now we've got 31 who are falling in behind that. So it's growing.
Yeah, well, they need to get the numbers up. She got to go. I think she believes that she's the guy with all the arrows, the saint that has the painting with all the arrows in it. What was the saint's name? Anyway, I think that's what she thinks she is. She's on a holy crusade now. She's a crusader.
Yeah, remember how we were talking about how there needs to be actual consequences for these politicians who openly defy not only the federal constitution, but their own state constitutions like this. And then I did find an article talking about what Robert just brought up. And so here's the, you know, and it's breaking news. Like this article I found is just 3 hours ago. New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has renewed her executive orders aimed at addressing gun violence and substance misuse in the state. The initial order focused on gun access received sharp criticism, the renewed order has an updated way to get guns off the street. The renewed order has been updated to require the Department of Public Safety to conduct gun buybacks. They will have to host buyback events in Albuquerque, Espanola, and La Cruces in 30 days. The point is to address gun violence in the community. The fact of the matter, quote, the fact of the matter is that New Mexicans are still being threatened, injured, and killed by firearms. Just yesterday, two guns were found in the possession of students at an Albuquerque high school. And while thankfully no one was hurt, these incidents have profound psychological effects on our children, unquote. Luann Grisham said in a press release. Let's see. I'm trying to get down to the... So it doesn't really, quote, it's vital that we all work to nurture a culture of responsible firearm ownership and safety by supplying free trigger locks and orchestrating safe surrender events. We join forces with our communities, courageously tackling the menace of gun violence to ensure the safety and well-being of every New Mexican, Health Secretary Allen said. And then, of course, in the article, they quote again, gun violence is the leading cause of death among young people in New Mexico. That should horrify us, New Mexico Department of Health Secretary Patrick Allen said in a press conference. So, yeah, like all these gun grabbers, you know, they're rallying around her to do this. I'm not finding a link to the actual order or the updated one, so I guess we gotta wait for that to come out. They have a link to the original executive order that she did, but no link in the article yet for this new one and how it, and specifically what it says. So I just wanted to, you know, bring that into the mix. This is crazy.
Well,
we need consequences. She needs to be more than just lose her seat as governor. She needs to be prosecuted for this kind of stuff.
There's already been a federal judge. His name is David Herrera. I can't pronounce his last name. He issued a temporary restraining order blocking Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham's revised public health order. So it's already been blocked. Which is awesome.
Oh, I didn't see that. Google is snoozing on the job here, I think, because we're not getting recent info here.
I'm getting this from the Pinion Post, which is a conservative paper here in New Mexico. So that's probably where everybody else is getting everything.
Is Robert here tonight?
No, I'm not.
I just came back on because, you know, it's my son's 14th year birthday, so I'm, you know, having cake and everything, but I'm back on. I'm back on with you guys because, you know.
I'm me, but who
well,
are you?
Happy birthday to your son.
Yeah, he's 14 today, so.
Happy birthday to him.
Yeah, well, he's growing up fast. They grow up quick. Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And then next year, able to get permit to drive. Does that scare you?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm worried about that. You know, listen, though, real quick, not change the subject, but he just turned 14. He's 6'4".
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. According to the charts, he's going to be 6'9". That's what the chart said. I can't believe it.
Well, sounds like
getting ready for the NBA.
Right, no. I'm hoping.
Sounds like Barron Trump, man.
Like Barron, him and Barron maybe get on the scene.
Well,
that's a big dude. But yeah.
Yeah.
I just banned Dirty Hole Liquor in the chat room. We got Joe Gibson's fan club in the chat room here, apparently.
Assholes. Yeah. I didn't even look at that yet. They're cowards. Let's see here. Oh, Dirty Hole. Isn't that nice? That's nice to have, huh? Nobody cares. Yeah. Nobody cares.
Yeah,
why don't you come up
cares.
With your real name, coward? Oh, boy.
Yeah. It's like apparently they all woke up or something. You know, now they're starting
yeah.
to wake up. This is kind of what happened last week, too. It was in the second hour that you're that Joe Gibson's fan club started to show up.
Well, last week we had Warren's fan club show up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's a good evening. I am black. We don't care.
Okay, yeah, good evening. It's wonderful that you're black. Okay, that's not usually how I introduce myself. Hi, I'm Lucy Libertarian Laurie Ann, and I'm white.
And a lesbian.
According to Warren,
yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not a lesbian, for the record.
Well, they start
but
that.
Okay, hello. Hello, Grover Washington.
I think I'll go up to Santa Fe in the roundhouse and tell them, well, I identify as the governor today.
Well, that's another thing, too, because you know you got Warrens out there listening, and Robert, you know he doesn't like you. So anything that's said on this show, they'll twist it around, you know? So just be careful,
absolutely.
You know?
Like, it doesn't matter what you say, he'll twist it around. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't
that's
matter what you
do.
Say. If he gets of a mind to twist it around, that's what he'll do. It doesn't matter what you actually say. Never.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's how they operate. You know, that's how narcissists operate. That's
yeah.
the classic, you know, narcissistic personality trait with. Yeah, and that's part, you know, unfortunately, that's how the liberal media works as well. You know, we've seen that happen.
If Warren, if Warren wants to call in and defend himself on my show, we'll tell you what, should we give him a 15 minutes just to defend himself if he wants to give his say, you know?
You'll never hear the end. You'll never hear the end.
I know.
You give him 15 minutes.
That's up to you. If you want to pull your show like that,
you're
certainly welcome to. It's your show.
It'd be an endless story of victimization and oppression.
Yeah. You have to be a Black Power show for him to call in. I mean, what was that show that he called into on Blog Talk Radio where he called in and just started telling his stories? And, Sarge, you called into that show, but they gave you like a minute and a half to talk before they cut you off. You ever notice they're famous for doing that?
Yeah, and
I
listened to it, and he went on for like well over an hour almost nonstop, like, even the host of the show like barely got a word in because he had to spend well over an hour whining and crying about it,
yeah.
you know. And of course, he did nothing wrong. You know?
Nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Totally a victim. Totally a victim.
Sarge got a minute to defend himself. A minute. You know, that's what they do. They do that all the time. I noticed that. And the liberal Dan did the same thing the other night. You don't get no time. They always do that, liberals. They always do that. They cut you down real quick. They give you 30 seconds, you know, bam, mute you.
Man,
you know?
That sounds, this guy sounds like a guy that me and Gunsling have dealt with at one point by the name of Sensor, but that's a whole nother story. But that's a whole nother story. This Sensor guy wants to be a pregnant man at some
oh,
point.
Yeah.
Well, that's his problem, right, Gun?
Oh yeah.
It's his problem.
Hey, speaking of that sort of thing, what do you think about Hillary Clinton's remark about deprogramming Trump support? What is it with this can't help themselves? They just keep letting the cat out of the bag.
You know, like that Dr. Strangelove character in the movie Dr. Strangelove, or how I learned to stop worrying about the bomb. You know, his right arm keeps popping up in a Nazi salute. I mean, these leftists are just like that. It just keeps popping out of them. The fascism, just, they can't control it. It just uncontrollably pops up. They don't mean
who's this guy? Who's this guy? You guys maybe know Gunslinger and Mike or whatever. Who's this guy on the Facebook that does this rap music or whatever? Really, I can't understand a word it is, but they send it out. What the heck's his – I'm going to get his name now. He's on Facebook. I know he sends it out to everybody, and I think Warren was a part of this too. Oh, man, what the heck was his name? Oh, man, hang on. Oh, I got the page right here. Good. Let me see what his name is. He's got a rap name – E.M. something. His name is E.M. Oh, what the heck? I'm going to try to find it real quick. It's hilarious, the song, but it makes no sense. It's just funny, you know. And he's got Steve Urkel in there on one of them from Family Matters. And, you know, and it's like Fight the Power, you know, like we're all of us are evil. And it's crazy. It's funny, though. I'm laughing. It's not meant to be a comedy, but for us, we would laugh at it, you know. And it's like they're all serious about it, though. Steve Urkel sending a message.
Yeah. Well, you know, like Hillary says, you're a Trump supporter, and you must be, and I'm quoting, formally deprogrammed. And by the way, that formality is going to be instituted courtesy of your government at whatever level.
Hey, Sarge, maybe they need to set up a offshore store for California to go out there and purchase their guns.
Oh, it's EM9. EM9. By IEM9. That's the name of it. You guys ever heard of that?
No.
The video he sent me, like they sent it to me, and they mentioned my name in the comment, right? And it's hilarious, man. It's funny. It's got that Civil War movie about the Black Brigade that they formed? What the hell was the name of it? With
Massachusetts?
Yeah, Glory. What was the name of it? Somebody just said it.
54 Massachusetts, yeah.
Glory, that's the name of it, Glory. Glory. It's hilarious. Robert, can I play one minute of it real quick? It's hilarious.
Sure.
All right, I'm going to play it real quick. It's hilarious, man. Hang on. Here we go. Hang on, guys. Time out. I've got some technical difficulties here. But it's worth the wait. Trust me. Hang on. I got to mute this. It's worth the wait. Okay, we should be able to get it now.
Not on water or on land. I may know that you, Blessed Jesus Almighty, are with me. And I have no fear.
The problem is it makes no sense.
Yeah, I know. And they're showing, like, you can't see the video, but they're showing symbols of, like, the swastika and, like, all these other symbols of, like, BP gas station and you know, it's hilarious, man. And it's got this guy singing. He's got dreadlocks. It's a white guy with dreadlocks. It's just, oh, man. I mean, it's just,
oh,
I don't
God.
Know. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like white privilege, stuff like that, you know, and you know, all that kind of stuff. But it's just, that's the kind of stuff that gets sent to me on Facebook, you know, that I got to deal with stuff like that. So they labeled me in the video for some reason. I don't know why, but I guess I'm the evil one they're fighting against.
Yep.
You evil, evil person. Oh, my God. You talk about God. You talk about going to church. You talk about being a Christian. You evil man.
I know. I'm on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you remember Joe's not the evil. Joe's not the evil man.
Oh,
Joe's not the evil man. No. This guy's evil. Just like I think Warren is evil, and our friend George Sensor is evil at times. But that's neither here nor there. But,
well, Sarge has been a part of the shows in the past where I've been attacked by those guys. So, Sarge, remember that when they used to call up my show and they just, well, I was a rat. I was filthy, no good. Remember that? Sarge was on those shows. Yeah, Sarge just sat back laughing. He couldn't believe it. And they just were trashing me.
Yeah. and they N-word me to death and down.
Oh, yeah.
Man, it was hilarious, man.
Why don't you admit you're a racist, Joe? Why don't you admit it? You're not a white supremacist. I said, you're right, I'm not.
Let me tell you what happened with this guy that I keep talking about. Okay, me and Gunn used to call this guy's show, and we were basically his only guys on the show, other than somebody from so-called Arizona. But that's neither here nor there. What happened one night is I posed a question. We were talking about the destruction that we would. It was something about the possible EMP attack on the infrastructure on the internet and electrical and stuff like that. I posed the question: what would happen if the lines between America and Europe would be cut? All right, and then he never answered that question. He went on to attack Gunslinger and all this stuff about and Gunslinger's has been a licensed and bonded electrician, right, Gunn? And he knows about this electrical stuff. And Gunn was talking about what happens if the electrical goes down. And he didn't want to hear it. He was talking about, well, I've got A1 incredible technicians that are my friends that can, you know, do all this stuff that have told me that can't happen. You know, backups. And that wasn't the point that Gunn was making. The point was about the power. What happens if the power goes down? You know, and that's the thing. He attacked Gunslinger's trade. Right, Gunn?
Yeah, when you attack somebody's trade, like I said, I'm a retired master electrician, electrical engineer, 20 years in the field. So, yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about, sure. Yeah.
Well, you take that as a badge of honor.
Yeah, a bit.
Yeah, that one thing about that I had talked about Governor Grisham here, you guys remember Riley Gaines?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, here's another one that came from, and it can only happen in this state. She came here and talked at the UNM, with the University of New Mexico, and a whole bunch of students rallied against her. And
yeah, they surrounded her too, right?
Okay, yeah. Well, UNM had to put up a security force to protect her. Okay, here's what has happened now. She has been slapped with a huge bill for unsolicited security force at UNM speech.
Oh,
that
God.
Can only happen here in New Mexico.
Wow. Wow. I mean, she would have been killed. They would have killed her.
They would have killed her.
They were torn to pieces. Wow.
So now the UNM has slapped her with a huge bill for that. And that I need to get into that, but let's see it. I don't see, $10,000. claims she was billed $10,000 for police presence she did not request at the event. So,
wow.
And that's just it.
I don't know.
Why wouldn't she request protection? That doesn't make any sense to me at all. Like, I'm just going to walk in there. I'm the governor. There's no threat.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to ask for any police protection.
Yep. But there are other things going on here in the state that actually tells that things are falling apart for the liberals. That Vasquez, who beat Yvette Harrell in that last race, he is now listed as one of the top-ranking most vulnerable U.S. House Democrats in 2024. He is right now so far behind in the polls because Yvette Harrell is running against him again, and she's just walking all over him in the polls. So hopefully he can take that seat back. But he's listed as one of the top-ranking most vulnerable U.S. House Democrats in 2024. So things are falling apart. And our New Mexico treasurer has been found guilty of violating state campaign reporting laws. So Democrats are just falling all over the place.
Yeah.
And
true.
Yeah, and then I'll have to look on my computer when I'm back at it, but there was a Democrat legislator that got busted recording sexual interactions in his hotel room or something with hotel staff without consent.
Oh, I heard about that.
So it's like, okay, yeah, like I'm going, all right, you know, like this is, like you said, it's like, you know, they're showing their true colors more and more, and I'm just even surprised that the liberal media is even on it. It's like, you know, well, I guess we have to reluctantly report some of the stuff that the Democrat politicians are doing. They're sabotaging themselves. Like Republicans, you know, libertarians, none of us, we don't have to do a damn thing. They're just, you know, chewing off their own feet themselves, you know.
Yeah, and
yeah.
It's fun to watch.
What's the old action? If your enemy is destroying themselves, you don't want to help them out. The only thing you want to do is hand them an anvil.
Yeah.
You know?
Like in Looney Tunes when that anvil was off. They're down there on the road, and the anvil comes down and bops them on the head, and they have no clue where it came from.
You know, I compare what's going on with Trump to the old Looney Tunes cartoon of the Roadrunner and the coyote. You know, at the end of the day, when he finally caught the Roadrunner, and there's a cartoon that shows him doing it, he holds up a sign. He goes, "Now what? What do you want me to do now?" And it's like, once they, if they are successful with this stuff against Trump, which I don't think they will be, but that's, you know, if they would be successful, what are they going to do? Without Trump, the ratings for the TVs is down. Without Trump, they have nothing more to talk about. Without Trump, Trump is driving everything right now. They don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we want him in jail. Well, maybe you do and maybe you don't.
That's for sure. But there was another headline here that says, "Morning Joe is flustered over poll showing voters trust Trump more than Biden on key issues."
Yeah, wonder why.
You mean Morning Mika?
You know, did you see that word on Trump, on the latest on Trump there? He went to Iowa or somewhere up there where they grow wheat and corn and all that good stuff. And he signs his name to the big old fucking combine, brand new fucking combine down the field. You see that? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't say, "Hey, can I drive this thing?" You don't see too many combines in New York City. I bet you.
No, I know. Well, fun to drive.
That combine is going to be worth a lot of money.
Yeah, probably $2-3 million for that thing. Jeez, them things are expensive.
Oh, yeah. Yes, as it is, but with his signature on it.
Well, it'll be priceless now. It'll be a collector's item.
Yep.
I hate to put that thing back out in the field. You know, we don't go in a museum somewhere.
Yeah. Come on, Jake. I get a kick out of watching the news because they just don't seem to understand that everything they're doing is only helping the other side.
Yeah. Only helping him. Yep. Crazy.
I mean, think about this. His poll numbers went up after he had that abortion. He went to that abortion of a CNN town hall meeting, which was basically, and I agree with Ben Shapiro on this, it was set up and advertised in the wrong way. It was set up as a Republican town hall meeting, but they asked questions for the majority of that thing that Republicans do not care about. They don't care about E. Jean Carroll elections. They don't care about, you know, all kinds of several different things that Shapiro said, that they ask these questions and the Republican voters do not care. They don't care about those stuff now. They care about what he's going to do with the economy. They care about what he's going to do, you know, if he's going to get us out of this fucking proxy war in Ukraine. They care about, there are several things that they didn't ask that Republican voters would care about, but they chose to go the other way. They chose to try and get him on this other stuff, which is like he said, like Ben Shapiro said, it's already, all this stuff is baked into the cake, right? Everybody knows who Trump is. Everybody knows what he's going to say on this stuff, you know, and it's baked into the cake. So you don't, Trump has literally spent his entire adult life in the spotlight, right?
Right.
You know who he is. Yeah, you know who he is. So when they decide to hit him on all this other stuff, and oh man, I love one of the responses that he gave about E. Jean Carroll. He said, "Oh, and by the way, she named her cat Vagina."
Yeah, I heard that. God,
that was hilarious.
Did you hear about that after Kevin McCarthy was taken out of office and they put in that new McHenry or whatever his name was? Did you hear about what he did?
No.
Oh yeah,
Nancy Pelosi got kicked out of her office.
Yeah, that's great. That's going to go down in history. Literally, it was beautiful.
I thought that was just freaking awesome.
And she wasn't even there. She was out there worshiping that witch out there in California, and she wasn't even there. I love it.
Yeah, well, here's the other thing about that. He gets kicked. McCarthy gets kicked out. Not only does he get kicked, humiliated by them using this rule to kick him out, but he's now going to resign his congressional seat. He's done. He's no longer going to be a congressman. So,
hey guys, hold that thought for a second. There is 1 minute left of the live broadcast. So if you're out there and you're listening, you have 60 seconds to call in 646-478-5284. And you can kick back and listen or press 1 to raise your hand in the queue. And we'll bring you on. So we're about to go into overtime in about 40 seconds or so. So call in now. All right. Resume.
right, and that's the thing. These people don't know. They're trying to get Trump. They're trying to run the same shit against Trump that they ran against what's his name, Nixon. The whole get Nixon thing was a thing about all about getting Nixon out of the office, right? And keeping him out of the office, right? Now, maybe right. Nixon made some poor decisions, whatever, but I feel like if Nixon had not decided to give up and just resign, if he had fought it, if he had tried to fight it, like Trump is trying to fight it, you know, he could have possibly survived. But that's an argument for another day. This stuff they're doing with Trump is, the more they do, the more there's a reason. You've heard of different places that want to bring cases against Trump, but there's reasons why. Like, there was a rumor about Michigan trying to bring a case against Trump, right? And one in Arizona. But it hasn't come to fruition, because they know that every time they bring something up against Trump, his poll numbers go up.
Yeah.
Now, how much more can his poll numbers go up? I don't know. But do we really want to see that? Do we want? Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that Michigan brings something up against Trump, and they say, okay, we're gonna put him on trial in Michigan, right?
Right.
Well, then if they do that, and then his poll. He's already at 60% versus, and he's already, I think, one or two, or maybe one to between 1 and 4 points up on Biden. If Michigan brings it up, then his Republican stuff is going to go through the roof, and that 1 to 4 point could be 5 to 8 points, you know, against Biden. And so we'll see if any of these other places bring anything against Trump. We'll see. I doubt it, but we'll see.
Okay. Well, Bianchi dropped and he's back in there again, so.
Well.
Oh. Welcome back, Bianchi.
Well, he raised his hand, so I let him in. So.
Yeah, I had to. If my phone is on one program for more than 4 hours, it cut off for some reason. I don't know. So
well,
I know if you're on Laurie's show, you're talking about 3 a.m. before you get off here.
Yeah.
Sometimes that is the case, unless, of course, my T-Mobile decides that it wants to end everything on me. Blog Talk hasn't ended my show abruptly for quite a while, so knock on wood, and I'll watch that happens on Sunday.
Yeah, I wish I could have stayed on Sunday, but there were things that were happening here I had to take care of, so I had to go.
I can forgive you for that.
And I tried to get into American Statesman on Monday and didn't get there, so I've been listening to the archives. That was a good show, too. So, and I've usually hear all the shows eventually. So, you know, I've listened to, you know, Beyond the Mainstream and Crazy Nation Radio and your show and Black by Color Only, and I'm usually pretty busy during the time I'm not here listening to other shows that I've missed. And I also went in from.
I tried to keep up on that, but I would be like, I'd have to be like, you know, listening to Blog Talk Radio shows for like 24/7 to catch up with everything. So I could only, I try to keep up and listen to what I miss, but I fail at that sometimes as well.
Yeah. Well, I know that I was on your show on Sunday. You guys were talking, somebody was talking about, I think it was Joe or Gunslinger, one of the two, had mentioned that they thought they had found Warren on Facebook and gave the address for it. Well, I went in there. That's definitely him. So, but of course, I didn't say anything. I didn't want to make his head get any bigger than he already is.
Oh.
But I'm certainly glad he's gone.
Yeah. I'm glad you're gone.
Yeah.
How can we miss you if you don't go away?
Well,
I don't
miss
him one bit.
No, I don't miss
him. I'm just waiting for when he's no longer worthy of even being a topic of conversation. It's just like, okay, plenty of other stuff to talk about besides Mr. Warren. I think he's not that important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't even going to mention him, but then I thought, yeah.
Yeah, but if you ever need an object lesson for malignant narcissism, you always have Warren in sight. Yeah, you're right about him, but you could say that about Mr. Sinzer too, right, Gunslinger? Is he there? Is Gunslinger here?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm here. Oh, yeah, I just had my thing muted.
I mean, George Taylor is a narcissist, too.
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100% narcissist.
Yep.
No doubt. Hypocrite.
Oh.
Coward.
Let me tell you how he decides to handle these trolls at times. Oh, he'll kick them out, but he'll say, oh, I'm going to give your number to my friend who works for the FBI or who worked for the FBI and get you put in jail, which is a lie.
Yeah.
Snitches, man. Wow.
Yeah.
That's
bullshit.
That's how narcissistic this guy is, that he thinks that threat's going to go, that's going to go, you know. But that's, yeah, you know. It is what it is with these narcissists.
Yeah.
And don't forget,
well,
when
you know, they didn't care
forget.
To do too much to threat to get Supreme Court justice, so I don't know what kind of chance he's got.
Yeah.
But then again, of course, those Supreme Court justices had the wrong opinion, so who knows with this current FBI?
Yeah. But this is the same guy that Gun can attest to this. This guy has anger problems.
Oh yeah. Well, see he's got such of a anger problem that now I support the New York Safe Act. At least it keeps this son of a bitch without keeping getting a handgun and carrying it. Because number one, he'd probably kill himself or kill somebody else. That's the mental case that he is. He don't need no gun. Okay, this is one person that don't need a gun. So, yeah, that's the only thing that's keeping him from getting again is that New York Safe Act. Yay for that one, at least that one.
Well, he's got a 22, but we're talking about pistols.
Yeah.
You know, and
pistols.
That act has a bunch of medicines that are considered as mood-altering or mind-altering medicines, that one of them is a seizure medicine that he uses for his epilepsy. He has epilepsy, this guy. So, and because he uses this medicine, he can't get a pistol. You know?
Pistol, which is good, because, like I said, when you have these anger issues and you explode like a fucking hand grenade, okay, you don't need to be carrying a gun. Okay, that's a recipe for disaster. I mean, can you imagine that somebody that's a hothead that blows up and he's left his bike on a bunch of times and he doesn't get his way? It sounds like he's throwing dishes across the fucking room, cussing and raising hell and all kinds of shit. And I was like, this guy wants to carry a gun? I don't want to be around him.
I don't think so.
No, thank you.
That's why I left them so hot to trot, to restrict our right to keep their arms. They think everybody is as volatile as them. They project onto others what they are. That's why they think most people can't be trusted to carry firearms. They think they're like them.
Yep.
Complete lack of impulse control.
Yep.
Right, and that's the thing. And this is the same guy that any little technical difficulty he would have, you know,
major
set him off. You know, even if it wasn't his fault, when he was still on Block Talk, and they used to have, you know, one of the technical difficulties Block Talk has, right? Well, when it would go, he would just go off for about 15 or 20 minutes, you know, just on the technical difficulties, and cursing all over the place and all this stuff, you know, and Gunn was there. Me and Gunn were there when this happened, right, Gunn?
Absolutely.
did I call into the wrong show? I'm hearing talk about gun control. Yeah. Interesting.
Why would that be a wrong show for you, Don? Wait a minute. Why would a show on gun control be the wrong show for you, Don?
Man, come on, man. Just let the joke land. Damn. Let me have my joke. Damn.
Okay. I'll let you have your joke.
I'm giving
you,
it to
I never know
I'm
about
giving
that.
It to her.
Yeah, okay.
I like Nod. We might disagree, but I like
been
these two people
with,
in my book.
Lucian Grisham, Nas.
What's that?
You been consulting with Lucian Grisham over there in New Mexico?
Yeah, the Wicked Witch of the North.
Who was that?
Okay. Well, now you're going to pretend ignorance, eh?
I don't know who that is. Lucian Grisham?
She's the governor of New Mexico. She's a little petty tyrant. They decided to arbitrarily suspend the Constitution because she's got some kind of emergency powers. She hallucinated in the New Mexico and the United States Constitution.
Right, and the judge overruled it, right? So it was...
Right.
Oh, that's all that matters. That's all that matters.
The judge sent it back, and now she's approaching it at a new angle. Originally, she tried to use it as a health emergency. Guns are like COVID, pretty much, was her approach. The judge shot it down, sent it back to her, and now she's trying a different tactic. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, she had done
good luck
show, with that. You know, party of hundreds of thousands of abortions every year. They're doing a gun control for the children. Hey, they want to keep killing.
Yeah, the problem with that is...
I mean, they really kill me. They really do.
The problem with that is that she supposedly said it was for the children, but she banned all the parks that they no longer go to.
dude, come on. You don't expect consistency from a leftist, do
you? Yeah.
The U.S.
I mean,
not likely to happen, man. Not likely.
You know, she's only doing what they've done before. Because remember, the Supreme Court, whatever, smacked down the SAFE Act in New York. And they just reworded that thing and passed it again, you know. That's what these gun grabbers, that's what these people do. They... okay, if we can't get it this way, we're going to try another way to get it done.
Right? Well, you know, what she was saying there that, you know, they're doing it for the children. You know, Butt Buddy, he was signing all those executive orders. Oh, it's for the children. It's for the children's safety. Here it is right here in 2020. I'm sorry, I don't know if that's right, but damn, what a number. A total of 615,911 abortions were reported in the USA in 2020 alone.
Hell, black women aborted over 25 million in 20 million in 35 years after Roe, 30 years after Roe.
But yet they did it for the children's safety.
That's more than some
nation. Yeah, right. but they do it for the children's safety and their health.
No,
yeah.
Tomorrow morning, just want to let everyone know I went to a Republican meeting with the Lieutenant Governor Mark Johnson and. A couple other candidates are going to be there, so the sheriff from our county, and it's a Republican meeting, obviously, so I'll be there tomorrow morning. So anybody want me to spread any messages, any questions for my lieutenant governor, if anybody's out there from North Carolina, let me know.
I'm too far away.
He's running for governor for North Carolina, though, actually, Mark Johnson, so he's pretty much along the same lines of belief that we believe. So he's anti, you know, globalist, and hopefully he gets in there. But it'd be good to have somebody to, you know, that, well, you know, if we can get in there, he gets in there, you know, we can get a good crowd in there of people that believe the same way. And, you know, it's not about really believing the same way. It's about believing in the Constitution and obeying the law and obeying the Constitution. And that's what's really what I meant to say. And that's what's important for everybody to, you know, when people hear us talk, they say, we know, we have one-sided beliefs or whatnot. No, we have the belief that all Americans should and every political leader should believe, and that's in our Bill of Rights and Constitution, and that we should obey the law. We're a nation of laws, not men. No? So it's I just don't, you know, these liberals out there.
Constitutional laws.
Yeah.
Correction.
What
you
a
know,
key thing.
One of the things that I'm wondering, you guys, I really am, is how do I pass along the important information that Hillary Clinton was saying, we talked about a little bit earlier, how do we pass along the information for Trump supporters to sign up for their formal deprogramming? Does they need to be formally deprogrammed? So where do you guys sign up? I need to pass that along to you all as a public service announcement on behalf of Hillary Clinton. I don't know. You got to reserve your seats because they're going to fill up fast, you guys. You know, it's going to fill up bigger than a Taylor Swift concert. I mean, come on, you got to reserve your space now.
Yeah.
Well,
keep programming. How does that work exactly?
Well, hold on though. You kind of got to give it to the old girl, man. She sees Biden's vulnerability, and she just swung really hard to try to see if she can get herself back in the conversation, because she's never letting go of that dream of her being the first woman to get it. So, I mean, this was clearly, you know, something that they kind of workshopped and tried to roll out and to see what it'll bring back for them. But my eyebrow kind of raised when I saw it. I said, oh, okay, she's trying to get back on the scene. This is interesting. She tried it.
You know, her son-in-law's father. Her son-in-law's father spent time in prison for doing a Bernie Madoff. Did y'all know that?
Mm-hmm. I didn't.
Good old
Chelsea's husband, I can't think of his last name. I think it's Polish, but I'm not sure. Well, he spent time for pulling a Bernie Madoff someplace where he was working and stealing people's money. He went to prison.
Yeah, so this would be interesting to see if she catches a little bit of wind beneath her wings to try to jump back in there, because we talked about that Clinton Foundation.
Wind beneath my wings.
Yeah, I mean, think about
now
it.
I'm
going to
have that song stuck in my head. Thank you, Nod.
It's the only way she gets back in. That's all I'm saying. So, you know, this would be interesting, man.
Well,
it'll be fun.
I don't know. I don't think she'll run again.
Oh, I mean, it would have to go really, really bad for Biden, and the money would have to kind of flow to her for it to happen. But you think she's, you know, killing all possibilities? No, she's gonna try if she can. But the one thing, though, that kind of steps out, like if you get away from what she said, think about this. We actually live in basically a reality version of the Tower of Babel, where people get their information from outlets, some good, some really, really bad. And you know how many people turned their phone off all day the other day because they thought they was going to have a 5G signal that was going to turn them into a zombie? So, I mean, this is not a smart population at this point. Like, we got some issues.
Especially here in New Mexico.
I was going to bring that up. I mean, I turn mine off. I turn all my crap off. I turn power off at the power strip to my TV stereo. I drained my cell phone battery so that it was completely dead. So I never got it, which is good.
I was driving down Battleground.
Turning into a zombie.
I was driving down Battleground.
From an IT perspective,
well,
I did that so that the government couldn't, you know, send out that signal and be able to easily get all the metadata on all of my devices. And that's a thing that's called the metadata. You can get metadata off of all of the devices, what kind of device it is, the make and model, the browser that you're using, the IP address that it's being connected to, all of that kind of stuff. So I looked at it as
Lori,
a great opportunity for the government to gather intel and be able to pinpoint, you know, where everybody is, location data, all of that stuff. I know because I used to do this stuff at my past job. I used to be the person in IT that HR reached out to say, hey, Lorianne, we need to investigate this employee because we suspect that this employee has been clocking in and out and not actually at the location they're supposed to be at, you know, and we suspect that it's fraudulent. And so I was the one that went in and looked at their logins into their our Active Directory as well as the system I supported and put pieces together to basically go, yeah, okay, so they're using a different device. They're at a completely different location, and I was able to piece together the information based on the metadata collected. And so by the government sending this test message out, in my view, I'm like, well, this is a great way to gather information on pretty much everybody that has a cell phone, a tablet, a computer, you name it, you know, even your TV, your smart TVs, all of it. And so it wasn't because I was afraid of turning into a zombie. Of course, I haven't gotten the clot shot, so I wasn't worried about that anyway. I was suspicious of it because of the intelligence gathering that it could have done. Plus, Russia did the very same test the day before. Russia did it at pretty much the same time. So why is Russia and the United States performing the same emergency test at pretty much the same time with each other? That right there raised some red flags to me. So, you know, that's why I did it. And I don't feel stupid. I'm glad I never got it. None of my devices got that stupid message. And so, therefore, the government didn't get any information off of me. And right.
I don't think mine got any of it.
We just got it all.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you, Lord, they already got all that.
Well, all they have to do is go to Blog Talk Radio, and there we are.
Yeah, well, think about the Apple update. The last iPhone update, like, this is going to break up a lot of couples. You can't turn your phone off without, like, if you're on a family plan and y'all sharing location or whatever, like, if you're in a relationship, when your phone goes off, it can not only give your spouse how much battery you had left, so that lie about your battery ran out, that's not going to work. They're going to know you was at Shelly's house. And not only did the Find My iPhone stuff, I'm going to catch people up. They're going to cause a lot of breakups, man, with a lot of this data stuff and tracking each
that's
other.
That's what they're trying
else.
To do, isn't it?
And that's just the stuff we have as the front-facing part. So when you start talking about the back-end part and what the government has, they got all that information.
And we need to find somebody who knows how to hack and do a real good job at that and put a program on all of our stuff.
All they need is your phone number.
Yeah, and that when they come in, all it has to do is say, we don't want you here, we're not interested, hang up on them.
They need your phone number. Like, for instance, if, say, I was working for such an FBI or something, and all I need is your cell phone number, Robert, and I can listen to all your conversations, greet all your text messages. That's it.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's
I
that
don't
easy for them.
Much. I don't text that much. I texted Lorianne earlier, but I think that was the first text I did all day.
None of it is private anymore. None of it.
Yeah.
Not the electronic world, no. Just, you know, we have the old saying in the electrical world, electronic world, that just because it's off doesn't mean it's really off. But that's again.
Mm-hmm. It is if it's unplugged.
Nope.
Nope.
Not really.
And the batteries
taking
out.
Not really. You could project a beam of energy to a phone device from probably a couple hundred, 300 feet away, and that phone will come on. Easy. That's what they've done. They've been doing that for years.
Yeah, they sell that stuff on Amazon.
Yeah.
They sell cell phone jammers on Amazon.
Yeah.
That's why I let my battery drain, and then I tested it out. I'm like pressing the power button, and there just was not enough juice. I let that sucker drain completely, so it not even, you know, barely even started to power up, and then down it went. Like, that's how drained it was.
The only way that you can really safely guard your device like that is put in a Faraday cage. It can't transmit either in or out. But there's enough power in that EEPROM battery in there, and all cell phones got them. Okay, they're built in to power that thing up if they wanted to power it up. Okay, there's power there. Just because
what
the
about
battery
hand radios?
Ain't dead, you know. Hell yeah, they got all kinds of shit up there like that. That's
what about hand radios?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what, you know, computers. That's how your computer remembers that EEPROM is hard coded. Like a chip that has the basic information about your computer and the boot devices and crap like that, you know, the hardware of it.
Yep.
And then you have the CMOS battery. And the CMOS battery is why, like, even if your laptop has been without battery and not plugged in, it still remembers what time it is, stuff like that.
Yes,
so that CMOS battery is basically just a wafer battery, which, by the way, is a very easy thing to replace. Like, if you notice your computer is slowing down and it's taking a long time to boot up or taking a long time to do programs, most of the time, instead of having to replace your whole fucking computer, you actually just have to replace your CMOS battery because your CMOS battery is getting low. It's like a $5 fucking battery, and if you can get to your motherboard, you can swap it out, and then presto, all those slowness problems go away because that CMOS battery is what keeps your device or, you know, your computer or whatever, as well as the timing as well. So it'll slow everything down when that battery is getting low because your computer is set to do everything in a sequential way when it comes to powering up all of the hardware that's across your motherboard and stuff like that. So anyway, that's the technical explanation for it.
CMOS means complementary metal oxide semiconductor. And Faraday bag is named after Faraday, the person who invented the capacitor. But no, get CB radio or get ham radio. And you like me, da 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 KT0J.
Yep.
Can they trace those ham radios still, even when they're off?
Heck no.
No. No. The only way they can trace them if you're transmitting and they triangulate. You know what they used to do back when the CB radios and everybody had them linears and all that shit?
Yeah.
They can triangulate you, you know, by your signal when your signal comes up. But they have to wait for
you to
key down.
We used to do that here in Albuquerque, and there were three of us that had the cars with the dual whips on it, and they would use those three cars to triangulate and try and find where these people were.
Oh, yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
Yeah, they used to be called rabbit hunting.
Yep.
Yeah, I was one of those three cars, so I was always used for that. It was fun.
Yeah, getting totally off the grid is a totally different thing than what we would think. Like, if you want to really get off the grid, not only would you have to use the ham radios and everything that you guys are talking about, but you're talking about not communicating with anybody else who has data that they can kind of tie down to anything else. Like,
yeah,
your metadata, all of your contacts, and everywhere you've been, all the cookies you left all over the world. Like,
let me give you a little secret.
You have to go almost Kaczynski to do that, man. Like,
why get off the grid? You know you can't get off the grid, so what's the best way to do it? To counter intel or just change all your information and stay on the grid?
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter because they know where you are, okay? If you're connected to that grid, they know where you are. You got a cell phone, they know where you are. You got a bank account, they know where you are. Got a credit card, they know where you are. So, you know, just give them the big thumbs up, the finger, you know, the finger.
But if you assimilate into another person, Gunslinger, like, for instance, if I become a different person and stay on the grid and just change all the numbers that they track you with,
then you can make a false identity. You know
what I mean?
Well, Joe, get on a program called Signal for your cell phone call. It can't trace that, they say now. Signal.
Well, they,
and
they
I got
pure
talk.
Yeah, so they say. Too.
But yeah, those are better.
I got rid of my Verizon friends and got pure talk. At least when I call customer service, it's a lady. And matter of fact, they're in your state. Nah, it's Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Cheaper. And same amount of data.
It's just to really do it, you would have to have the discipline of a monk. Like, to constantly switching out stuff, SIM cards and burner phones and all of that. Like, man, at that point,
I
don't
know
what's
working. Couldn't stay off that damn phone.
I can imagine with the new cars, too, they would probably be able to tell where you're at if you're driving your car.
Oh, hell yeah. No problem.
That's why I have an older one.
Oh, yeah, with OnStar. Your friendly OnStar that can, you know, turn your engine off or on or whatever, you know, tell your location, send emergency services your way, because it's supposed to be helpful, but no, we're not gathering information on you or anything.
About that. Y'all remember that guy
they
who was the Rolling Stone, where his cards were stand up?
They wouldn't do that. You know, they're more honest. You know, back in the day when I had my CB ham base station, I had a 65-foot tall tower with a Gizmonti 21-foot beam on it. NASA developed the Gizmonti beam antenna. And I had I still got the radio right here, the Galaxy Saturn with 1,200 channels on it. I could talk all over the United States. And I had a motor.
What did you turn that beam with, Gunslinger?
I had a motor.
Four-cylinder Continental engine?
Well, almost, yeah. I had a you know, it's an electric motor that I had a couple boxes there that I could move the lever and turn the house 360 degrees. I could talk over the United States. Man, I was up there, let me tell you. On the back side, on the front side of that beam, fuck. That 600-watt tube type kicker, 600-watt tube type. That motherfucker, I could blank houses down, 3 miles down the fucking road, shooting that beam around. Man, it was badass. I designed all that shit. Designed the tower. Designed the gin poles. Raise it up and down by yourself with a boat crank. Shit. No problem. Yeah, I was talking down there.
That was the good old days.
That was the good old days.
Yeah, man. Stop fighting, Big Brother. Love Big Brother. Big Brother loves you.
He
right?
had those. Had that amplifier with those 3Z500 tubes in them.
Yep.
Those big bastards.
Yep. Well, hell, that 600 I had, that dumb bitch, was, it was $100 per tube at the time. $100
oh,
per tube.
Those are
them things expensive.
She had 3Z500, then you had the 3Z1000. Those things were ridiculous. You walk by a person's house that's on the air, the hair raises up on your skin.
Hair raises up on your back. Yeah, no shit. No shit, yeah. Like walking, yeah, you know, close to those, like walking close to those transformers.
You accept that you live in a surveillance state at this point. You kind of got to accept that, and any maneuver you make outside of that is going to have to be with that understanding. But the idea of getting off it, like, that's just not going to happen. This is a fully, almost complete surveillance state. Like, it is what it is. The things that, like, in East Germany, the things that they would have wanted to know from you, that they would have had to get the secret police to come beat you up to give out, you give away freely. So you get on Facebook, you tell them where you went to eat, you tell them what music you listen to, who your friend group is, what you like, your dislike. Like, we give that information away freely. So it's a lazy surveillance state because we give them half of it.
What year? Yeah, well, where your movies are, what you cook for dinner, like all of those questions that ask you, like, you know, back when you were growing up, what were the songs playing on the radio and all that kind of stuff. All, you know, there is so much stuff that is disguised that you're just giving away, like, you know, the answers to your security questions, you know, and on your bank accounts and things, you know, it's just like, it's crazy.
Even if you try to get off the grid, remember what Ron Reck, he lives up there in the mountains up there near Branson. So he said it took him 10 years of lawsuits of his local power until they finally gave up. 10 years. He fought that motherfucker. He said he fought him for 10 years.
Branson, Missouri, up there by Lake of the Ozark.
That sounds... Oh, man.
Yeah, he lives out there in a freaking forest.
Yeah, up there in a damn forest.
Yeah, I've seen his place.
That's up there by Bagno Dam.
Yeah.
Yeah, before I moved here to New Mexico, I lived up in Colorado, up in Gunnison, up in the mountains, and God, you can get lost up there anymore, but anymore they probably know you're there.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
That's the big joke with Ron Rack. We were talking about, well, people are going to come and try and take your guns or force you to take a shot or whatever the hell it was. Go into a place like where Ron is, or Ron Rack is, and you don't know where you're going, people are not likely to see you again.
Yeah, and he got a backhoe. Get it? Backhoe? Backhoes dig holes.
Yeah, there's a lot of places like that in this country
You know what, though, Gunn? We've got a backhoe in the White House with Kamala Harris, right?
Well, yeah, a hole there, no doubt. A
backhoe.
Well,
yeah, man, y'all get out of here with that.
Yeah, the backhoe, too. Yeah, don't back.
Kamala's more qualified than most of the people that have been there. Y'all chill out, man. Leave that woman alone.
She's guilty.
How did she get her first political job, though?
Oh, you talking about the relationship with old Willie Brown?
Willie Brown's girlfriend.
Well, hold on. Let's be honest. You look at Kamala now and imagine a young Kamala. Yeah, a young Kamala. Yeah, Willie was going to try to have a relationship with her. Come on. What, he's blind? Come on now. Yeah, you say, I don't believe that.
Yeah, man.
I don't believe that,
Joe. He got something out of it, and she got something out of it. She ended up.
I'd have to be pretty darn drunk.
All right, Joe.
Let me tell you that.
Joe, come on now. You know you're lying. You know that woman was fine when she was young.
Not my type.
Yeah, but she was annoying. Look, I think it would be hilarious to listen to, like, Kamala Harris give an instructional speech on, like, how to give a blowjob.
she probably wouldn't even know what that
would be
hold
hilarious.
On to.
Well, point being, though, she's on the list to be prosecuted.
She's an expert. She's an expert.
Good luck with that.
Oh, yeah. It's coming.
That.
It's coming.
No, I mean she's a part of the system. It is what it is. That's why she was a prosecutor. She had them people, inmates, working as firefighters, and then when they got out of jail, they couldn't use that as experience to become a firefighter. She was strictly for the system. She was locking people up left and right. That's what they like, those type of people.
Oh, yeah. That probably
she's corrupt.
Just got
corrupt.
Her off, man. You know, that power.
Oh, yeah, she was a real
kind
yeah,
of mentality.
Until she saw some sort of political advantage in letting rioters out of jail and encouraging them to continue rioting. Then all of a sudden that prosecutorial hat got tossed in the dumpster.
Yeah, she doesn't know it.
These people have any real belief system. The only belief system they have in is a will to power. You know, nothing else matters. It is their paramount virtue. They will abandon any so-called prior position since they have no principles. They're just positions they hold for whatever politically
that's right.
Advantage.
No, it's a fragile system, Sarge.
Until they go on to the next one.
Well, it's a fragile system. People don't understand. They think they're safe, that, you know, everything's all safe and we've got this wall of security around us. You know, this system can break down and there could be, a civil war could happen. You know, many places in this country are vulnerable to chaos. You know, everyone thinks the military is on standby and the military is going to restore order. The military can't cover every square inch and square mile of America. You know, barely even a quarter of a state if they tried. So, you know, come on, think about it. You'd have to rely on the militia community. And already know people, red flags are getting sent up about that. You know, ooh, they're terrorists, they're racist. You know, you're going to have to rely on people like me and Sarge and people that are constitutionalists that believe in law and order. Because you think you're going to rely on these liberals? You think you're going to rely on these people in the city on food stamps that hate America, that hate the government? They're going to be rioting, burning down their cities. They're not going to be standing up for what's true and what's right and being patriotic or trying to restore order or law and order. They don't believe in our laws and our system. They'll be happy to watch everything burn down.
Right now, in these big cities,
they'll take part in it. That's the even more so. They're going to be the ones taking part on burning everything down, stealing, looting, killing you for whatever.
Yeah.
You know, those are the very people that we'll be fighting against. I mean, and it's becoming clearer and clearer. It's just,
yes.
You know, what do you do? You know, what do you do? You've got to be armed, and I am glad that I don't have any of my firearms registered. I bought them long enough ago so that, you know, nobody would really know that I actually have them unless they listen to Blog Talk Radio and my show and I talk about it. But they don't know what I got. They don't know how much ammo I got. They don't, you know, because I bought them so long ago that, you know, all of that stuff is ancient history now. But... You know, we are looking at that. I mean, we were talking about EMP attacks. What the hell do you think is going to happen? We have an EMP attack. The electrical grid goes down. The supply chain gets completely axed. You know, there's no way for food and good water to be, you know, to be given to all these big cities and these populations. What the hell do you think is going to happen? Everything's going to break down. Civil war would happen under that circumstance and other circumstances. You know it. We all know it. And it's better to be prepared for it.
Yeah, good luck with that because half of these militias are feds. Like these militias,
they're not.
Once they try to mobilize, they're going to find out how many feds are in there.
They're not half feds.
They never get rid of the form federal 4473s. They got them in an archive somewhere. They can find out if you bought a gun from a gun FFL dealer, filled out a form 4473. Got a record of it somewhere. Believe it.
Yeah, they're probably
you're really far away.
Not if you bought it privately, sorry.
Maybe not, but private sales and the 80%. Receiver industry and the so-called ghost guns, that's why they're cracking down on them so hard.
Yes.
What they want to do is turn everybody into an FFL. That means if you try and pass your gun down or sell your gun to somebody or pass your gun down to your son or daughter, you know. Oh, you passed your
stuff. Well, somebody kicked your door in and stole your gun. I don't know where the hell they went.
That's right. That's right. And in fact, it's a rule, don't buy your gun from a gun store, you know. Don't. You're a fool. You know, buy it privately.
You're damn right.
And don't tell anybody.
And the militia is where it's at. If we ever ain't going to get rid of no militia.
No.
He crazy.
No, I didn't say get rid of them all. I just said those groups are infiltrated, the same as the other ones. Man, they've been doing this for a long time.
Infiltrated for what, though? What way? Nobody's breaking any laws, so what do you mean infiltrated? If civil order breaks down, what good is that infiltration going to do?
You think the breaking of laws is what triggers it? No.
Militia is not no 10,000 men, by the way.
You're talking millions.
Militia is not 10,000 men. Everybody in militia know each other, go over each other's house and eat and drink and, you know, have fun. They know each other.
Yeah, a lot of people know their handler.
Well, you get ridiculous sometimes, man. I mean,
Now people are referring.
I'm going with the history of the United States.
Let me ask you something.
I'm going with the historical definition of a militia, not this militia that the left wing has propped up to discredit what a militia is supposed to be. I'm talking a militia that is properly regulated, and this is what they meant by regulated when they wrote the Second Amendment. They didn't mean federal laws that are unconstitutional and weren't even envisioned in the 18th century. They're talking about the kind of regulation that makes militia well-organized, disciplined, and answerable to command authority, like the governor. That's, whenever I refer to a militia, unless I otherwise qualify it, that is the militia I'm talking about. Not what left-wingers use to discredit the notion of a militia.
Well, nobody's going to listen to the governor of New Mexico, Michigan, Oregon, California.
That's why you got to kick out
Illinois.
The job.
You got a problem. We got a problem. I ain't listening to none of them.
We know they're the wrong people being the job. I'm just saying that's what the Constitution talks about. We got
what Sarge and everybody else is talking about here is the group of people that Paul Revere roused when he made his famous ride.
That met Major Pitcairn on the Lexington Green. The 79 militiamen carrying their own military pattern muskets who ran up on the British, confronted the British on Lexington Green. They were organized. They had selected their militia company. They elected their captains. You know, they were answerable to the militia authorities of the colonies at the time. That's the militia I'm talking about.
You know, you had two men ride that night with Paul Revere. What was the other guy's name, Sarge?
I think the Jewish guy who rode a little further. Yeah.
It was a black guy.
Because Paul Revere got captured, but they let him loose.
There was two
guys. At one point in his ride, he was captured.
But the red coat caught him, turned him loose.
Paul Revere
rode south, and then there was another guy that rode
to the north.
Right, north.
Ludington, 16-year-old. That's who you're thinking of.
Yep.
Yeah. That's who I was thinking of. I knew it was like a teenager or something that also was involved. And then, you know, really, like, they didn't even have to scream it through the town. All they had to do was, like, you know, knock on the door of the biggest gossipers of the town, which is our other women, and news would spread faster than they would on horseback.
Other than the churches, you know where most of the revolution was planned, and you know why we have the word gossip?
In taverns.
Yep, they would go sip and plan the revolution, right?
So go step.
Yep. Yep.
There we go.
Yeah,
and
when
in
you think
taverns
about it now,
and then also in churches, more of the
right,
two biggest.
Right.
And then that's why, if you think about it, you know, that's why the British were trying to, like, keep, you know, prevent, like, the import of alcohol and things like that. And the British, like, put troops around taverns and things because they were trying to restrict the ability for people to get together and plan this stuff. So yeah, the British totally targeted taverns for that reason.
I understand what Naj is saying, because you got people listening now. You got people listening. They're writing down, taking notes. You know, you got your info card people and everything. Yeah, I understand all that. But but the system breaks down, though. Those people, what are they going to do? They're going to organize government troops to come round up certain people on a list. You know, I doubt that would happen.
Let's just add this to it, though. King George maybe made the biggest blunder ever thought when you think about it. When they prioritized other colonies instead of over here, when you look at what the possibilities were for what America would become, it's insane when you think about it. It's like, damn, y'all really spread yourselves thin so far across the globe that you didn't have enough to really handle anything here to the point of where, you know, the Continental Army could get footing enough to last long enough to get the support from the French to, you know, to really make the battle go the way that it went. But, man, that was a real dereliction of duty, man, when you think about it. Like, King George's raggedy leadership is a big part of why they was able to be successful, man, because the British had the resources to really stomp this whole thing out at the beginning.
Well, you got to remember, the Battle of Bunker Hill, the British were driven pretty much out of the North American colonies. At least the northern colonies, they had to regroup and reinvade with a very large army. Remember, they had to come back after the Battle of Bunker Hill.
And after they burned the White House.
They won the war right then and right there.
Yeah,
when they burned the White House, they were going to march to New Orleans for the Battle of New Orleans. The militia wore their ass out.
And then don't forget about the Battle of Baltimore, which ended up giving us the national anthem, you know, where, oh, we're gonna shell this fort, we're gonna go ahead and shell this fort and try to get them to give up, and well, they had the exploding shells or whatever the hell it was, but they only had a certain amount of those type of shells, so once they ran out of those shells, they had either two choices. They could sail in, and the ships could sail in because they were shooting from far away, or they could sail away. They chose to sail away because they knew if they tried to sail in that fort at Fort McHenry, I believe it is, they would have tore those British ships up if they would have tried to sail in.
Another thing, you had slaves fighting on both sides. You had slaves that was lawless. Well, it was Cromwell, I think it was. He promised to take them back to Africa, and he ended up taking some to Nova Scotia, Jamaica.
Oh, you're wrong, Robert Pianti. Not according to Warren. Nope, that's not true. You know, they're slaves.
Know
how could you say slaves were doing a good thing for America? How could you say that?
I was every time you mention that name, my damn my shades run up.
They went to Nova Scotia, they went to Canada, they went to the Caribbean. A lot of those British loyalists fought on that side because they promised the freedom. But just the bigger picture, man, the war goes another way. Benedict Arnold is a hero, and we're reading about him in textbooks as this great his great fighter.
I'm gonna say out flat out, man. With the exception of maybe guys like the Swamp Fox, Marion, and maybe what's his name?
Von Steuben.
Morgan, Daniel Morgan. The greatest combat hero of the Revolutionary War was Benedict Arnold, particularly at the Battle of Saratoga. We could also include the Battle of Quebec and several other battles where he distinguished himself in combat,
where he was wounded severely, especially at Saratoga and Quebec. And without him, with his assault and his inspiration, when the revolutionary, when the Continental Army was faltering, and he inspired them to go back and fight his battle of Bremen's Farm, of Bremen's Heights, the redoubt the British had there, they would have surely lost the Battle of Saratoga. The French would never have come into the war at that point, and who knows how the Revolutionary War would have turned out. He was probably the greatest combat hero of the Revolutionary War. Everybody recognized it. The problem was his treason was so great that if it had succeeded, they would have lost the Revolutionary War because the British would have been able to split the colonies in two. They would have taken West Point.
Well, yeah, later on, Sarge. People would have rose up and against the tyranny at other times.
Yeah, so it's a paradox. On the one hand, Benedict Arnold almost single-handedly saved the revolution at one point. On the other hand, he almost surely lost. He's probably the greatest contradiction in American history. And in order to understand Benedict Arnold, you got to look at both sides, because both sides were true.
Right, and he, and from what I understand with that whole situation, some of the higher-ups or whatever kind of betrayed Benedict Arnold. He was trying to get them to do something, and they said, no, we're not going to do that. And he got frustrated, and because they weren't taking his advice to do a certain thing, and it's like, okay, he's the one that defended he came up with the defenses for West Point, right? He put a chain or whatever across that river and whatever that was, and this, that, and the other. And he was a brilliant guy. Benedict Arnold was a brilliant guy, you know.
But he was also so ambitious, and he felt he'd been wrong by General Horatio Gates, who got an undue amount of the credit for the victory at Saratoga that rightfully belonged to him. And he really was peeved about it. He really was. And he thought he didn't get the promotions that he deserved. And he never got over that. He felt he was slighted by the Continental Congress and even by General Washington, who did put him in command of West Point and all that, because he had this severe wound that he was limping. He could hardly walk well. I mean, he almost lost his leg, and that never did quite heal. And, you know, he felt he was wrong. He felt he didn't get payment that was due him because he had spent a great deal of his own funds in equipping part of his forces and everything else. I mean, he had a lot of grievances against the Continental Congress. Plus, he was overly ambitious, probably. He had an overweening ego. And all of those things combined to cause him to the great betrayal that he did. So I didn't really understand the Benedict Arnold story. It's really fascinating. He's a fascinating character. No two ways about it.
And in that day, the militaristic was mixed up with the political. So those appointments were really important as far as whatever accommodations you were able to get. And then also, you know, whatever you were recognized for winning, like valor was really important. And honestly, you think about it, that's something we probably should go back to. Say what you want to say about Julius Caesar. He was out there with his men. They're just taking it somewhere else, taking it to Rome. Like Julius Caesar was out there. He was on the front lines. He rallied troops. He won different battles because of what he did strategically. And you think about the world after people had to actually risk their blood when they, you know, made the call for war. When they beat the drum for war, way
back in the day,
Biden
was
because
doing that?
Oh, no, hell no. But you got to remember, too, the thing about Benedict.
Now,
you got to remember, they court-martialed Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold was court-martialed because the Continental Congress accused them of misappropriating funds during the ill-fated Quebec invasion of Canada. And he had lost a lot of the records because they had to do this hasty retreat. A lot of documents were lost or destroyed. They court-martialed him. They said he owed £1,000. He lost the command of the district, of military command of the District of Philadelphia. He was really angered about that one. He really thought they wronged him on that. And it was at that point that Washington
in an attempt to mollify him, offered him command of West Point. At that time, he decided to betray the revolution and turn West Point over to the British.
You know what? You know what Daniel Boone's daughter's name was, Laurie? Jemima.
I do not.
Like Aunt Jemima pancake mix.
Mrs. Buttersworth.
No lie. See, her
that
name was
canceled.
Jemima.
No wonder why.
That's the truth. Daniel Boone was something else. The Indians, the Swanee kidnapped her. He went after them and wiped out the whole tribe. She was tearing off pieces of her clothing, her petticoat, and leaving them. And that's how they tracked where she was. And, you know, they waited to the right time, and they wiped out that tribe.
We just lost
the early frontiers.
Jemima, that's insane, man.
Jemima, yes, her name was Jemima. Daniel Boone, David Crockett, then you had Kit Carson out there in California and came back. And I mean, the United States has got a brilliant history. Hell, look at what Robert E. Lee, how he performed during the Mexican-American War.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, our studio just went
Robert,
dead,
were
so,
you just saying that we're in no man's land now?
We're in
the switchboard is shut down?
The studio just ended. Yes, yeah, studio
I blame,
just went down.
I blame Joe for bringing up the militia. That's why the studio ended. I blame Joe.
Blame Gibson.
but no, the Jemima thing is interesting because names are so cyclical, and names travel amongst cultures, and then they're thrown away and picked up by another. So think about the last time you met a white Jerome. At some point, Jerome became a blackity black name, and black folks used Jerome, and white folks stopped using Jerome. You know what I mean? Like,
well, you had the same thing with Washington. You know of any white Washington?
Oh, man. Not many. I know a whole lot of black ones.
Well, Jerry Seinfeld's white. He's a Jerome.
Yeah, but he don't use Jerome, though. You know what I mean?
No.
The last Jerome, white
Jerome.
Jerry. Former owner of the Carolina
I wonder
Panthers,
what would
Jerome
happen
Richardson.
To my kid if I had a baby girl. You know, if I ever had kids and I had a baby girl and I decided to name her Shaniqua or something, I wonder how she would be treated in school. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, what?
Yeah.
People's freaking out. I mean,
thrown in the trash.
You can listen to them names and tell right around the time.
Well, not nowadays. Now they're moved up to the top of the pile because of, you know, diversity.
Hey, the unemployment
stuff,
rate
you know?
Did not reflect that. No, not at all.
Yeah.
But no, man,
you know, I actually read an article. I read an article about AIDS discrimination, actually. And so if you're 50 or over, you're supposed to avoid using certain words because then employers
those
will discriminate against
trigger.
You because they
right.
don't want to hire
right.
people 50 and over.
Yeah, I can see it. So naming your daughter Ethel, probably not a good idea. She might get AIDS discrimination. Yeah, that's
I don't have that problem.
We don't make too many Ethels anymore. Adolf, mm-hmm. You don't see too many Adolfs.
Yeah, or Mildred. Or Mildred,
oh, yeah. Mildred
or Lillian.
Yeah, that's definitely an old lady name.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's both my grandmother's names, basically. Mildred on my dad's side and Lillian on my mom's side. You don't hear any of those anymore.
Or like Rosalie.
Yep.
You know, or Vera. 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 Pearl.
Willie.
Yeah.
Hey, Willie. Yeah. Hey, Willie.
Fred. Fred or
Dick
Frederick.
Dick was popular.
Nobody names their kids Fred anymore.
Yeah, nobody's named Dick anymore.
But I mean, think about it. Look at all the black Washingtons, Jacksons, and Lincolns.
Oh, yeah.
around.
Right? I never knew no black Lincolns. I ain't never known no Lincoln in a black person.
Oh, I knew a few.
I've met a few.
I knew Washington's, Jackson's. Well, hell, there's one up there in Chicago on two black like Jesse.
Abby Lincoln. How about Abby Lincoln? Remember her?
There you go.
Yeah.
Leroy. Leroy.
Oh, yeah. Leroy is a definitely black 70s name. There's not too many Leroy's.
What about, what's his name, Louis Farrakhan?
Well, you know,
Louis.
If I had been born a boy, my name would have been Fred Kellett the Fourth. I would have been named Freddy. I'm glad I wasn't named Frederica. Yeah.
I like Lorianne. I like Lorianne much better.
Yeah, I was named after a soap opera character that my mom liked. Soap opera character from The Edge of Night. Her name was Lorianne, spelled differently, but her name was Lorianne, and my mom liked the name and decided to make my whole first name Lorianne, L-O-R-I-A-N-N, and no middle name.
Now, I bet you you didn't know there's at one point there was a tradition with the Italians, particularly the Sicilian Italians, that every firstborn child, the firstborn male child would be named after the grandfather. Firstborn female child would be named after the grandmother. So you come down here and there's a lot of Virginias, Josephines, Franks, Josephs, Tonys, you know. A lot of that stuff went around back then. Now, if my dad had married somebody different, had married an Italian woman, a woman of Italian descent, that's probably what would have happened. You wouldn't be talking to Michael. You would have been talking to a Frank or a Joseph or something like that, right? Because that's what they did. That's how they named their kids. You know,
y'all friends.
Yeah, what's
name
interesting
is
with my older sister, kind of defied that tradition with my older sister because her name is Christine, but my grandfather's name on my mom's side is Christian, K-R-I-S-T-I-A-N, the Norwegian spelling. But then my sister was named Christine, you know, the traditional, you know, American spelling, you know, with a, you know, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E. So in a way, she was actually named after my grandfather. So that defied tradition as well.
That's
on my mom's side, I have an Aunt Bessie. I have an Aunt Ruby. I have at least an Aunt Ruby. And then Bessie.
Yeah, Ruby's another old school one that's not done anymore.
Joe Gibson, your friend's name is certain name is hails from the French.
Yep.
In Anglo.
Well, it all solves the whole thing is, you know how the Chinese name their kids. They take some silverware and throw them up when they come down. Go ching chong ching chong chong. There you go.
And down here,
think about it. People got bored with names. Black folks started inventing names. Shaniqua, you know, Bokeh, or whatever. Black folks started inventing names. And then white folks started inventing names, too. So, like, now, a lot of the millennials, you'll find a bunch of, like, Kaylee, Maylee, Haley, you know, Kaysen. Like, they started making up names, too. So, you know.
Down in Louisiana, it was the black mulattoes, and they still have a cohesive in the politics down in Louisiana. Look at what was the guy that went to jail? What was his name? Notch?
Ray Hagen?
Hagen,
Ray
yeah.
Hagen.
He was one of them.
Ray
Hagen. Yeah,
Ray
he was
Hagen.
One.
Nagin. Yeah, Ray Nagin.
Nagin, yeah, he was one of them old black mulatto slaveholders. family, Kathy Hughes, probably. I don't know for sure with her. You go back and look at her people. They was lighter than the paper bag.
Yeah, man, names are just a weird thing, especially in America.
Yeah, that's probably why come Joe Brown didn't win the mayor race in Memphis. You got them black clans, dynasties in those families. You had the Fords and some others.
Yeah.
You know who I feel for? I actually had a friend of mine. I'm not going to say his first name so that people don't go and, like, you know, look him up. But his last name is Hell. And there's actually a lot more Hell last name than you might think. If you start looking at last names, you know, people named Hell.
Think about my man that just passed away, Dick Butkus. Rest in peace to the great Dick Butkus. He passed away.
You know, Nod, you had the same thing in Atlanta with the Youngs, didn't you?
Yep, Andrew Young and that whole little clan.
We have down here, we have a family down here called the Gay family. Spelled just like it sounds, G-A-Y, gay. E-J, gay,
I bet you the boys can
stuff.
Fight. I bet you the boys in that family can fight.
Right, but you also we had a football player that played for LSU down here. His last name, black fella, his last name was Gay, but his first name was Benjamin. Think about it.
Well, what about Bell Edwards? The Bells, they go back in the plantation days.
Yep. Well, you know what?
Well, you know
why he got elected? Because his last name is Edwards. Because people tie him to another Democratic crook by the name of Edwin W. Edwards.
Well, you know, it's just the same thing as naming your kid Dick, like Dick Van Dyke. How's it going, Dick?
Mm-hmm.
How's it hanging, Dick?
Yep.
I mean,
in the 60s, that was a name, boy. They loved that name in the 60s.
We love that one, yep.
Yep.
Dick Butkus was a mean son of a gun, boy, I tell you that.
Tough.
That was one person you didn't want to mess with.
You know, sad to see him, though.
Man, Dick Butkus was beast mode before beast mode existed, Jack. Dick Butkus was as bad a middle linebacker as ever existed in the history of the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Dick Butkus was minimized, tough, vicious, and savage.
Hey, Gail, who was it said, the running back said when they got the ball, the first thing they wanted to know, where is Dick Butkus?
Right. What Gail says, unfortunately, Gail says had Dick Butkus playing on the other team when it was on the field. He didn't even trust Dick Butkus when he was on his team being on the field at the same time. Dick Butkus sometimes forget he was supposed to be attacking.
Yeah, man, I wasn't old enough to see him play, but I grew up on that NFL film.